Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Hey there, welcome to Weekend Confirmed. My name is Garnet Lee, and we have an excellent show for you here, wrapping up April 2011. Saw someone the other day, they were like, I hate it when people write 2011, it's 2011. Like, wow, you're getting worried about how we say the date. Okay, so it'll be 2011. That's just for you. So joining me today is Mr. Jeff Cannata.
Two N's, one T, ready to rock.
Rocking the classic Enjoy 8-bit t-shirt.
Yeah.
And at the far end of the table is our friend, Christian Spicer.
My favorite day of the month is here. I love seeing you guys. Good to be here.
Dude. Returning champion.
You notice that he's looking very mercurial today.
Yes, high top sneaker with wings on it. I was like, I need to find vocabulary very quickly as I cannot be stumped.
Nice!
Yes.
Can't be stumped!
So now we know, and you are wearing an Eclipse shirt.
I am.
Now that we've got our wardrobe.
Well, actually,
out of the way.
So there was only one purpose behind my shirt today. I think Jeff can recognize what that might be.
It's purple.
Of course it is.
Also known as light purple.
Cause we're back to Prince tonight.
That's right.
Cannot freaking wait. But before that, we have a show to do, and it's got a lot of awesome stuff. And I want to start off by guys, we do the show here in the Atlantis group in Santa Monica, and Brooklyn, who is our producer, does an awesome job for us week in and week out, and I would love it if you guys could help support her. She is doing an AIDS life cycle ride, and this is an excellent charity. It's a great cause, and she needs your help because
it's awesome what she's doing.
Yeah. So what she's doing is check this, 545-mile bike ride from San Francisco to Los Angeles. That's 545 miles, gamers. 545 miles.
That's a lot of miles, yeah.
That's more than you've run in Call of Duty.
Dude, that's more miles than you drove in Grand Theft Auto. This is some serious shit now.
Yeah.
The other thing is, it's a great charity. So if you can help, Brooklyn's AIDS lifecycle donation page is tofighthiv.org/go-to/Brooklyn Frazier. But we will also have it in the show notes on Shack News. And you should do this because it's very helpful. You can pledge. So Brooklyn, what's the minimum pledge they can make? She says she thinks the minimum pledge is $20. So she needs a little bit more help. Like, we're not gonna like stress you out too much, but she needs a little more help so she can ride, because if she doesn't make the amount of donation that she pledged or whatever, then they're not going to let her ride. She's been training. She's been going through all this work to get ready. So please, I know there's lots of charities out there in the world. There's lots of things we've had, help with. We've done great support for the Japanese relief effort. But, come on, this is Brooklyn. She makes the show happen every
week.
And
she's going to earn it. She's going to earn it, man. Yeah. She's going to ride for 545 miles. That's hardcore.
It's pretty tough. So there's that. Coming up in the show today, along with tons of big games, Jeff Cannata has finished Dragon Age 2.
Yes, I have.
I finished SOCOM 4, but I mean, with no multiplayer, what are you going to do? We're going to talk about that PSN. We're going to talk about the new announcements of Wii. Do you think they'll even call it Wii?
I don't.
I don't think
did
they'll
you
call
see
it.
I did a,
I actually thought about that.
Did you see I did a Twitter competition of name the new?
No, I didn't. How'd I miss that?
It was pretty awesome.
What were some of the best ones?
The stream. I thought that was funny, especially as...
Except I immediately think of peeing, so I'm not
well,
good so
you, well, that's the
Wii.
Point, right?
Yeah.
Oh, the Wii, the
and
stream.
Then supposedly it's supposed to stream to the...
Oh.
See? It's pretty clever.
Yeah.
And then they were calling it the powerful NES, the penis.
That's
funny. It's funny. So there's some clever Twitter people.
The powerful... I kind of like that one. That one's funny.
Yeah.
And then all that. And plus, of course, we got an awesome music break. It's the Velvet Chameleon with 2.2 Cherry Blossom, which is Del Rio promises me it's awesome rocking music. And it's from Vancouver. And hell, Vancouver advanced. So we got to throw them some props.
Did they?
Yeah, they advanced. Didn't they?
Did you think about hockey?
Yeah.
I thought they got beat.
Did they get.
Or I'm thinking about Montreal got beat.
Montreal got beat.
Okay.
Yes. Mind. The Montreal Canadiens.
That's
went
how much
down.
I know about hockey.
The Montreal Canadiens went down, but Vancouver advanced. Yes.
Ah.
You got to keep up with your Game 7, man. Game 7. Yeah. Game 7. There's a lot of playoff action happening right now. You got to stay up on it.
I'm watching basketball.
Really?
Like a real American.
Dude.
My girlfriend hates me right now.
We could sidetrack on basketball for a minute. How can you watch NBA basketball?
How can I?
Yeah, I've been like watching
it. It's on my television. It's easy.
It's just not good basketball anymore.
Really?
I don't think it's
drama.
Especially the first round. The shorts are too long for you. You like it with a little more leg in there.
Nice.
It's just that it's become so busted the way the professional game plays that I get like it's fun to watch the individual achievement that some of these guys can pull off, like Kobe the other day, even like he's supposed to be like hurt ankle and all that, and the motherfucker comes in there and just blows up like
that dunk. Like, you see that dunk?
The dunk was ridiculous. So I mean, I get the athletic part of it, but what I don't get is how these teams like don't show up for games, like literally just, oh, you know what? I know we're in the playoffs, but we're just going to not show up, and we're going to get blown out by 20 in the third. It's like, what the hell? And it's because they're not playing good basketball anymore, you know? It's all, well, you know, if our stars get off, we got a great game, and if they don't, I guess we're screwed.
Yeah.
So
I think there are good teams out there, not to stay sidetracked for too long, but some of the young guns are good team players. I mean, I'd throw a shout-out to Durant, who is a star, but also, you know, helps his team out a lot. And then you have teams like the Spurs that are traditionally a team-based team, but they're just right now showing their age, I think. And
dude, I think they are worn out.
That last night was crazy. Wednesday night.
Wednesday night, like, that's getting by the skin of your teeth.
Yeah.
That is definitely getting by. So you're right. I mean, I really like watching Oklahoma City. I do like watching Oklahoma City.
They play ball. And the Bulls, Rose is awesome.
Okay.
He's a star, but the Bulls play ball. I mean, he won't even, I think their last two games, he wasn't the leading scorer. He was facilitating a lot of shots for guys and, you know, getting down low and passing out.
Do you think we could be like at the beginning maybe of a new, like on the very cusp edge of a new era for basketball? You know, like teams like this with like a lot of these teams with young guys, you're right, like Chicago, well, not a lot, but Chicago, Oklahoma City, definitely go back to playing more team ball, moving the ball around.
Well, I just think it's before they become free agents and can get their high price contract and move to the team and be the sole star. I don't know. I mean, there's money. Money talks. NBA Jam's a fun game, though. We get to play as Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Celtics look like money again, too.
It's because they're green.
Because they're green. All right. So
video games.
I don't want to talk about them. I want to talk about sports. By the way, we're recording this on Thursday afternoon. The NFL draft is tonight. Who gives a shit? By the way, players and owners, thank you for making me pissed at football.
Hey, at least we have a good cover athlete.
Well, at least we don't have Michael Vick, which really would have bugged me. It really would have bugged me. Is that bad? I mean, I get that like he served his time, and I'm all for rehabilitation of criminals and all of the, you know, forgiveness and like, but still. It's really hard for me to get over the fact that, like, there were horrible things done to Dog. Like, it was disgusting. Mm-hmm. And I guess the counter argument is that people make mistakes. God knows I've made some horrible mistakes in my life. Right. And I want to be forgiven for them. And I want to be able to, you know, go on and have a good life. And, you know, maybe the role model, maybe I should be thinking that he should be on the cover as a role model for, hey, you know what? Even if you mess up, there's redemption. There's a reason to get your shit back together, get yourself, you know, on a good path and man up and be a good person for the rest of your life. You can't just like wallow in it. You can't just like let yourself go.
Yeah. Consequences.
Deep thoughts on Weekend Confirmed. And Dong Wright. People Like Me, or whatever the hell it was. Remember that? Stuart Hanley. How did that go?
I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like me.
Yes, that was it. The one with
MJ. You know what else people like?
The one with MJ was awesome.
Video games.
Stop trying to get me to talk about video games. I'm not going to do it.
All right. It's your goddamn show.
Aww. What do you want to talk about?
People want to hear you talk about Rage, so talk about Rage.
Yeah, people. I'm sorry. Like,
I thought we just got that about Michael Vick.
Oh. Done and done. Rage confirmed.
You know, I mean, part of it also is I'm extra sensitive because, like, you know, I mean, it's only been like 4 months since I lost my puppy. So I miss
Michael
her.
Vick killed your puppy. I remember that.
No,
I remember that. It was awful.
God damn it. I'm just saying that, like, you know, I'm still like emotionally, you know, like I miss my doggy. I love dogs.
You don't want to listen to my finishing move then.
It's a sad
teaser.
Sad.
It's a little bit of a rage. But I do want to hear about rage, because you teased about it. Like, last week, I was the guy. When you're like, right now, a lot of listeners are out there screaming, rage! And I was literally like, what do you guys want to hear? And I'm out taking my dog on a walk, and I was like, rage! I want to hear it! And you're like, well, we'll save rage.
Yeah.
Boo.
Well, maybe we'll save it again.
It looks good.
It's all right.
You're telling me off mic.
It's a game.
It's no basketball. It's
you said you were very impressed with it.
It's got guns. Yeah. It's got guns. You shoot people.
Open world.
Some of them look like aliens. You know,
you were impressed by the size of the environment. They were enormous.
That's what she said.
I'm just going to
I like the way you're recounting.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you guys what Garnet thought.
All right. I'll stop being a jackass. So the thing about Rage that stands out to me now that I've actually been like really immersed in the whole thing of it is like there are a lot of developers that think they want to bite off a big game and like really like do like this monstrous game. We're going to build like this really big game. Rage is like out there for shooters of size and scope of game you want to make, right? Mm-hmm. Because you've got the single player campaign, which is one big thing. You've got the co-op Legends of the Wasteland stuff, which is all separate secondary missions. So I mean I like that idea too. Like I talked to Jason Kim, who's the senior producer on the game at the Bethesda thing for quite a while, and I'll flesh that all out in a minute. But so you've got that whole thing, which is all the co-op stuff, and then you've got this brand new sort of combat rally for the online competitive multiplayer. So
that's car based.
Yeah, but I have to say, from watching it, I'm really curious to see if when you play it, because, you know, we didn't get to play. So I played five levels of the game, but they were all single player. And one of them was in a buggy. But watching them demo the multiplayer, it really came off to me as not quite a Quake mod, but like what would happen if an id Tech 5 engine had been out for a while and someone had been modding it and made like a car combat version of it into Quake, because it has, you know, of course, all the iconic power-ups that you pick up, mm-hmm. like quad damage and all that kind of stuff. And they had the Quake announcer over the top of it, which really was sealing the deal.
Quad damage.
Yeah, and the thing that was cool, so the first thing they did was they demoed multiplayer, because I think that was their big shocker, and they, you know, their deal was, we didn't want to just do the predictable, and we didn't want to just force doing a you know, multiplayer shooter, because they have that stuff. And you know, one of the things that's interesting, Jason,
in your browser, even
they do have it. They do have it even in their browser. And we already know they have Doom, right? Mm-hmm. So we already know they have a new Doom coming, and that's obviously going to be, you know, by doing Rage, by building a new IP, I really got a sense that one of the things that was big to them was that they felt like a little leeway to stretch outside of stuff that they've done before. For instance, adding ammo types, which you would think, okay, that's not really a big deal. Lots of people do that now, right? But it's not really something you would expect in Doom or Quake. And if you did it, you'd have all these people arguing, well, that's not supposed to be in Quake, or wow, this is really cool. And you'd have
a new IP, or
you'd have people
license.
Choosing sizes. Yeah. But here you don't have to choose sides, because it is Rage. You know, part of Rage is we're going to do this way, and we're going to play up the tactical element of comment. So, you know,
can I have you step back half a step? I don't understand the comment about it kind of feels like a mod. That sounds negative to me. Are you?
Yeah, though, why do people take that as negative? That's
not
negative at all.
It sounds kind of
like... sounds like not professional.
Yeah.
Mods
are great and have become great.
Modern world mods. But there are plenty of mods that basically are guys doing their resume to say, hey, you should hire us.
So let me parse what you're saying then. You're saying that it feels like a mod because they're taking chances that you don't normally see in a base product and where modders can?
It feels like a mod because it's so much felt like a Quake game, like Quake. It so much felt like a game of Quake Arena, but instead of an arena, we were in the wasteland, and instead of running around, we were driving around.
Okay.
But the speed and pace of play, the dynamic of power up, risk and reward to get to the power ups, and like the chase of chasing people, and like, you know, like you played Quake, you know, like you started to learn your way around levels, right? And you had circuits that you would use on a regular basis because you're checking to see, well, has this popped?
Always moving in that
and
game.
And you're always
moving. So it's like, kind of like you're in a car.
So in a sense, it is sort of like that. And then the wild card, not the wild card, but the thing that they added to keep the game, to give the game a little structure, is the rally part. And so several, you know, like I'd say like it seemed like the balance right now was about three quarters of the spawn point nodes are spawning these rally blips. And whoever is in the lead has it, like the object of the game is to pick up the rally blips and like hit the next one. So it's like, so you know, like when you're playing, you ever play Motocross Madness?
Yeah, oh, sure.
All right, so you know how you have like the gates that you had to go through. Uh-huh. So imagine instead of gates, there's like an icon. First person to the icon picks it up and they get the points for hitting that one. And then as soon as they hit that one, the next one spawns.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to go. So you're always racing. And whichever direction the person in the lead is going, it'll spawn the next rally point at the appropriate spawn point in front of the direction they're going.
So is it a map or a course? You know what I mean? Like a traditional shoot? Okay.
So it's a little bit of both.
Map course?
Yes, it's a little bit of both. So it's not a traditional circuit. Like that was the thing that confused me at first. It's not a traditional circuit as in there's like a laid out circuit that you're going to always drive around the same direction.
You can pull up your map and see where you're...
But at the same time, you can see that there are a number of carved paths through the wasteland area that you're racing in. And you would be racing down similar paths, but depending on which rally point lit up next and whether or not you're in first or you're in one of the teams that one of the people that is chasing the guy in first, because keep in mind, you're trying to chase the guy in first because the guy in first has the highest score multiplier.
Oh.
And then when you knock him off, you can pick up his score multiplier and become the lead guy. So it's also
so
like
a game
of tag.
Like, a little like Mario Kart, kind of, where you're like shooting at the guy who's ahead of you. And...
You're always chasing the guy who's at the front of the rally pack. Yes.
Yeah.
And it has the score multiplier idea, so it's a little bit like a game of tag, but then it feels like a shooter running through the wasteland in heavily armed buggies.
So how is it feels like a shooter, but you're all driving the same direction the whole time?
Well, you know, the direction that you're driving is based off of whomever's in lead. So whomever's in the lead is trying to get to the next rally point to pick up that rally icon, right? And
there's no set way to get to that rally point.
There's not necessarily a set way to get to that point.
I see.
And the game engine decides where to spawn the next one after you hit one. After you hit, like as you pick one up, it decides where to spawn the next one based on your facing and where you're going. So one of the pro moves that he said some of the testers have started doing is that if they have a decent sized lead and they know they're being chased really heavy, is right before they get to a rally point to pick it up, they'll e-brake and flip the car around so that they hit the bug, so their buggy is facing the opposite direction as they hit the rally point, which will cause the next one to spawn the opposite direction they've been going. So if people have been people have been chasing them on an odd angle, like say you've been shot and killed, but and you're trying to like get back to where the lead race is, and you can see him and you know where he's going, and you're like oh, and you're like projecting forward, and you're trying to cut him off at an angle. This guy who's lead screws you, and he starts heading the other direction, and you have to like replot your entire overtake strategy.
So it's a random location based on the trajectory of the lead car.
Yes,
that's really
or based
cool.
on whoever picks up the next rally point.
Right.
So yeah, it's crazy. It's pretty crazy. It looked really crazy, very chaotic, very fast, really cool. It looked like really cool.
How do the buggies handle?
So I played the single player buggy race level because there's also buggy races within the main game at the hub towns, and they're really fun. I mean,
it's funny that you keep saying buggy. I'm just saying.
That's what they call them.
They call them buggies.
Oh, okay. They call them buggies.
All right.
They have no horses, but they are buggies.
They have whips?
There might be whips. Oh. Yeah, the bandits might have whips.
All right.
The bandits like whips. I like whips. why did I say that? That was terrible. They have just about the right feel I think you'd want, Christian. I mean, if you see them speeding around, they have enough air control that you can right the ship depending on what you get launched off of. You know, one of the things that it has always been really good at is handling geometry. And even though the game is much larger scale, like if you see rocks and shit in the course, you can pretty much count that they're real geometry. And however you hit them is how it's going to affect them. Like if it's a boulder that's like, you know, the size of this table and you hit it with your left wheel, it's going to upset the left front. It's not going to like do weird shit to the rest of it. It's like, every part of your car, of your buggy, is going to be modeled as if it was, you know, being affected by the physics and what's going on in the world accurately.
That's cool. I think it's important because, like, Half-Life 2, the buggy is awesome, like driving it. But I feel like that wouldn't work in a combat setting.
Light years different.
Well, what
this
I have
is,
in
this
my
is
head,
really good. It has a nice slide feel to it. You get like a good feel of like the dirt skidding. And
what I have in my head is Borderlands. In when you're
yes.
playing co-op,
it's very much
and
like
people,
that.
Multiple people are in a buggy, and you in those big. I don't know, like the third or fourth world, wherever it is. That's the big, huge open area, and there's bandits.
That's exactly. Very it's very much like that.
Yeah.
It's very
very,
very
fun.
Much like that. And the buggies look really cool. I mean, they have like really cool details. Like one of the buggies, the dude had like twin 50 cals mounted on the roof of it, and they were auto tracking, and you could like watch them auto track targets as he was driving. So that was pretty hip, you know. Like, of course, that is like all the brass ejecting, and like the visuals in the game are just stupid. Mm. I mean, they were demoing it on 360, and the game looked ridiculous. Just it looked ridiculous.
I'm getting more and more excited about this one.
I'm super excited about it. The single player is monstrously huge. Like it's just ridiculous how big it is. You know, you start off, you're fighting mutants, and then you're fighting bandits, and then eventually you're fighting this outfit known as the Authority. And the bandits, there's all like different types of bandits. So, you know, some of them like one of the things Jason was describing to me was how, you know, they wanted to not just, so if you've played other in most every other id game, he was pretty funny. He was pretty open about it. He's like, you know, we pretty much had the one face enemy. Like, you go to fight the demon things, or you go to fight. What's the name of the alien race in Quake? The we can look
I
it
don't
up.
Remember.
You have the iPad. Look it up. Look
yes,
it up.
Sir.
But they
make
said,
yourself useful, Spicer.
They said they got into that sort of, you know, like very one track. Like you're always fighting the same guys, and maybe they get more difficult or they get bigger, but it's always like the same, you know, the same sort of enemy vocabulary. Mm-hmm. So here, like, they wanted to be really like take advantage of the mutants being like really like creepy, organic, like mm-hmm. mutated weird things, and then the bandits having all these different clans. So when I was saying there was like the Wasted was one of the ones you pointed out to me. So the Wasted are kind of like the like they're wasted. They're kind of dumbasses. And so they don't use a lot of tactics. They don't really, you know, think things out a lot. They just kind of come at you like crazed dudes. But there are other factions that might be like the Jackals might be more sneaky and tend to like, you know, stand back and snipe a lot. And then you get to the Authority, and the Authority are all militarized up. And so they would use like complete military tactics. They have things like, you know, energy shields. That's one of the big things that they bring in here, is where you have to use different ammo types to affect the enemy depending on what their weaknesses are. So, you know, like if there's a dude with like this big, like one of the things they showed was this dude with his energy shield, and like they're going full out for the, you know, attack it the right way. If you just blast at the energy shield with ballistic weapons, even if it's a rocket launcher, it's not going to do anything to the dude, because the energy shield is supposed to stop the rocket. Mm-hmm. So you have to disrupt the energy shield and then attack him through that.
It's cool. And I like the idea that this multiplayer is trying something a little different. Even if it ultimately feels like Quake
yeah.
to you, at least it's trying something novel.
Well, the other part that they said is that, you know, they're really wanting to bring up the story piece in this game. And if they had done a competitive shooter, they would have had to, in some way or other, made some acceptance of, well, you're going to be someone's going to have to play the bad guys. Mm-hmm. And throughout the game, the bad guys are the mutants and the bandits and the Authority. And they didn't want to muddy the water by ever making you, even if it's multiplayer, be a mutant or a bandit or an Authority, because you're fighting against those through uh-huh. the story.
Yeah.
Same reason they did like the co-op side missions, which are the Legends of the Wasteland, which is kind of a cool idea. I mean, that whole idea comes from their having all the story that they've mapped out for the game.
Mm-hmm.
And they know, for instance, when they come into a different town that I'm trying to think of the example. The example he made was in the town that we've all seen, which the name of it just escaped me. But you get sent out by the sheriff to go take out this place where the bandits are making RC bomb cars. So one of the legends has to do with like, how did he find out where that hideout was? Well, in doing a bigger story-based game, they had to do all this canon and backstory. And in doing that, they realized there are all these other stories that, like, your lead character never sees, but had to happen in order for him to have his progression through the game.
Mm-hmm.
So let's tell those. So that's where all the co-op comes in.
Yeah. That's cool.
So you will get to shoot stuff.
online.
No doubt.
I mean, you will get to shoot stuff with other people online. It's just you won't get to shoot each other directly with guns. So it's Rage. It's huge.
It's cool.
It's freaking huge. Like the destroyed city was one of the maps I played, which is, if you've seen the video, we have it on Shaq. Everyone, I think everyone's seen it. It's where you go into like the hospital looking for the defibrillator.
Mm-hmm.
So I played that level for probably 20 minutes. And like, it was like, you come into these, like, you go, hop on this bike, you ride out in the junkyard, you walk through the junkyard, you get to where this, like, series of ravines and trashed out area is. You go through all those, you get to this hospital, you go into the hospital, you explore through the hospital, you go down to the sewers, you go through the sewers, you come back out on the other side. Like, I don't really remember id games having like this really sprawling massive levels like this, right?
Yeah.
Like, this was like amazing, like area after area, like all these different things happening. And I'm playing Jason, he's like, yeah, that's like a quarter of that level.
Jeez.
Does one aspect of the game take away from other aspects? I mean, you heard that argument with Uncharted 2 where it was like, oh, they put in multiplayer, just focus on making an awesome single player. And here it's, I mean, different teams. It seems like such a huge game and each thing is separate and different. I mean, is each game, and I know you haven't played through it, but like, is each game, you know, a B+ instead of making an A
definitely
single
not.
Player?
No, the single player is definitely not a B+. I mean, well, I shouldn't say definitely not. We haven't reviewed it. I mean, obvious from what I've seen when I played of it, I was really freaking jamming on it. Like there's so many things they haven't done before. Like they added, it's very Borderlands-like. You're right. It does have a lot of Borderlands-like stuff to it. Like, they've added collecting junk and having an engineering skill where you can build stuff.
Is one of those Quake 4 for the Xbox 360?
Hey!
Some of the junk, heyo!
Of the junk you pick up in the Borderlands. I think the difference, it's an interesting point that you brought up, because, you know, I just got to play Uncharted's multiplayer. And I like, if you're going to do story-based, I like what they're doing with Rage maybe more, because it's more tied together. And it doesn't feel like you're
complete
just doing
departure.
Something.
Complete departure from the game.
Here's Drake killing a bunch of dudes in multiplayer for some weird reason.
And that really shouldn't feel like a departure, because Drake kills a lot of dudes in the game. I mean,
He's a dude killer.
He is definitely
show him
a dude.
He'll kill it.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like,
but it does feel like the multiplayer in 3 is more of a, hey, we have a kind of a cool shooter engine. Let's completely
and it's just,
take that apart and make its own thing that doesn't really
work. Yeah, Uncharted.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying in 3.
When there are like tons of Drakes running around, 2 feels weird. I think anytime you have your central hero in multiplayer dying a lot, it seems weird. That was one of the smartest things I think Halo did, is it's red versus blue. It's not Master Chief out there,
yeah,
you know, being killed over and over again. And you have like 20 Drakes and, you know, 20 Scullies all running around. Just.
But I don't think that there needs to be so much of a integration between multiplayer and this. I mean, you can have a story, and then you can say, oh, this game engine is fun. Here's a playground to play with it. It doesn't have to relate to what the story
That's
is.
Definitely what they're doing with Uncharted.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't have a problem with that.
One of the big things they're going for is that cinematic feel. So if you saw, like, the videos that they showed from that event, you know, they have, like, this one level where it starts out and one team spawns inside a transport plane that's like rolling down the runway taking off, and the other team spawns inside trucks that are chasing it, and the team that's in the truck chasing them, they're trying to get onto the plane, and it's like a very short countdown, and then the plane takes off. But here's the thing, and this is very, like, people were really divided in their opinion over this, is that the plane takes off and that's like the intermission, and then most of the level, the combat, takes place at this airfield. There's no disadvantage or advantage to being on the plane. It's simply like, that was the intro. It was a cool place to fight. Your kills count there. But other than that, there's not like the team that got on the airplane gets a starting advantage or anything like that. It's just like, that was a cool cinematic thing. All right, play.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. I think the other way would be like, well, we didn't get the plane. There's no point in continuing.
See that? Right. So like, it heads off the whole idea of like, oh, I'm just going to throw in the towel.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I like the idea of a cool cinematic moment.
Does it become repetitive, though? I mean, if you're sitting down and you want to play some multiplayer and it's like, well, I got to get through this plane part before I can get to the, you know,
but that's
the
not a reason not to do it. I don't think it's, you know, I get it. People who play multiplayer over and over and over and over and over and over and over, anything is going to get redundant. No. But, you know, that doesn't mean you should strip it away.
And I like people that try something different. I mean, I don't want it to sound like I'm, you know, crapping on the idea of doing something different. That's awesome. I feel like, is it the best idea per se? But kudos for them and for Rage for not giving me Call of Duty, you know, clone number 7 or whatever it is.
Well, I wouldn't say necessarily that Uncharted 3's multiplayer isn't Call of Duty clone. It's not exactly a clone, but it's definitely where they're headed. I mean, you've got a
much
great...
more militaristic than it has been.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, 2 was I mean, basically, look what they did with 2 is they wanted to establish themselves as an online shooter. And this time they're saying, not only do we want to establish ourselves as an online shooter, we want to be the preeminent online shooter for PlayStation 3. We want to be the game you put in your PlayStation 3 and you don't have to take out. So it has a huge perk system. Another thing that they've done is this, I forget exactly, I think it's called kickbacks. They have like this kickback system, which is some even stronger bonuses that you earn by getting medals within the game. And it's one of the ways they're trying to encourage people who aren't necessarily the most adept kill to death ratio guys.
You can just say me.
I'm not saying I'm not in there as well. But, you know, doing things like finding treasure or evading kills or clamoring, you know, exploring through the level also earns you...
What are you doing? I'm clamoring.
Clamoring.
I'm clamoring through the level. It will reward me with kickbacks.
It does.
All right. Well, we're fighting everybody. I'm clamoring.
It also has this cool system of like catch up where if one team gets out to too big of a lead... It will apply an interesting handicap to that team that allows the other team to sort of catch up. But while the other team is catching up, the team that's in the lead gets to score more money, which goes into the ultimate reward system of where you get to buy your perks. Mm. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's really good. Like the thing we could talk about, and I mean, maybe we can think about this in the warning or something, is that I was really torn because I thought, wow, you know, like... This multiplayer for Uncharted is really coming together. Like, this is a really good multiplayer shooter. And this is what got me started when we were talking about this last week about like how many, you know, dudes with guns thing, because I was thinking, this is really good, but how many dudes with guns shooting each other things do I need? Because it is really good, but I'm not sure that I get the Unchartedness of it.
That's where the clamoring comes in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's something to think about. Mm-hmm. I don't know. All right, we'll give you a little time to ponder. Multiplayer shooters. Man, I talked a lot in the first section.
You sure did.
Jesus Christ.
Mostly about basketball.
Basketball Jones.
We're playing basketball. You know that song, Curtis Blow?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Basketball is my favorite sport.
Basketball.
Yeah, all right. All right, so before we break it down anymore, we'll be auditioning for The Voice later. We'll take a little break. When we come back on the other side, we still have, what do we have? I don't know. We got stuff. We got games. We got Dragon Age.
Yeah.
What else we got? What's Christian going to talk about?
Portal 2 and iGaming, iOS gaming.
All right. So stick around. You'll want to stay around for that and more on the other side. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from shacknews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. The Strog. That was the name of
them. You sure they weren't the Quakers?
The Strog.
No, you're not supposed to kill a bunch of Quakers in that game? I was thinking about the Gamefly app that we just heard a commercial for.
Yes.
You guys should call it the Game Flap. And then you could say, open your Game Flap and stick a game in it. This is why, see? Master marketer.
Dude, it's like Videodrome. You'd be like,
open your Game Flap.
You've seen that movie before?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's awful. It's good, but it's awful. But it's good.
Get your
it's
hands awful. On a game flap.
What do you have in your game flap?
Yeah, dude, you see like the queue of shit in my game flap.
My game flap is huge.
Yeah, tons of games in my game flap.
Can we just have a moratorium on flap? Because
I think it's
no flap is not good.
No
flap is like okay. How about this?
I say let the people decide.
All right, people, tell me about this. Would you eat a flap meat salad?
Oh, and you're not asking people to eat your app, dude.
Well, but I'm asking them to interact with my flap.
Exactly. Stick a game in your flap.
God, dude, it's awful.
Your game flap.
Flap and anything anatomical is not right. See, like, again, do you want...
Hey, you're the one that's making it anatomical.
Stick it in your game flap?
Yeah, you want to put a game in your app, right? You want to put the game on the app? All right. Moving on.
And I, by the way, that with my aside there was, I want to know where the idea of like calling skirt steak flap meat was okay. I don't care if that is the technical name for the cut. I don't want my butcher to tell me he's got flap meat for me. Because I'm really skeptical about where that flap came from.
Sounds like a discussion between you and your butcher.
Yes. And the baker and the candlestick maker.
Yeah.
So.
Games.
Games. Whoopee!
I got that several times. Oh, you were there.
We did. We played a lot of Mortal Kombat on Sunday. That was pretty freaking fun.
And I've played a lot more of the single player, too, but I'm not going to talk about that.
No.
It's just got a very frustrating end boss. And I don't understand the need for that. Why do you need to have, all of a sudden, your attacks just don't affect them in any way?
They do. You just have to, you have to watch and balance and...
Yeah, but that's not fun. Anyway.
So what you're saying is, I'm actually kind of curious about this. What you're saying is that because the rest of the game let you just sort of flail away and have a good time, that you're ill-prepared for the way the boss throws everything back in your face.
Yeah. And I think that the way the boss does it is it just decides to ignore attacks at sometimes.
That I would not disagree.
Doesn't feel fun. That feels cheap and frustrating.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that. So it's kind of interesting. If you had gotten to the end of the single player game though, and the end boss had been, just incrementally more difficult, would you have felt cheated? Would you have felt like, oh, I didn't get my money's worth out of this? You know, like this guy's too easy.
I'm sure there would be some of those complaints. I think there's a way to find a happy medium where it doesn't change things up in a what feels like a cheap way. It changes things up in a way that seems more challenging. For instance, as you do the climb the
challenge tower,
is that where it is? Mm-hmm. Where there's sometimes where you have to fight multiple guys. And there's new rules.
Yeah, and it throws different rules, which is really cool. I really like that a lot.
I do, too. And you know going in what the situation is, and you know how difficult it's going to be based on what you can and can't do. Whereas in the arcade mode, it's just like, oh, it's back to just wanting to steal my quarter, kind of.
But it is an arcade mode.
Yeah, but it's not fun. Okay. I want to talk about something that is fun, though.
So did you ever play, I think it was Dead or Alive 3? Where when you got to the final boss, it went to over-the-shoulder third-person 3D.
Really?
Oh, it was brutal. It was brutal. Everybody hated it. Huh. Well, not everybody. Well, most people. It was pretty tough. It was really tough, especially because, you know, if you played much of Dead or Alive, it's all about watching the timing and doing mega reversals. So in addition to him being, you know, crazy powerful and ignoring a bunch of attacks, they did something different and... I'm interested, like, was that, if this was,
well, but
is that sort of different you're talking about? What is it you want?
There's moments in the story mode where you're one guy against a tag team, and those guys can tag in and out, mm-hmm. and you can't. That's fun. That feels like, wow, I'm up against tougher odds.
Yeah.
Whereas just having the guy ignore your attacks sometimes, and you have to stick and move more than you normally
What about something like Soul Calibur, where they ape different abilities of all the characters you played against?
I think that's cool. I liked that. I mean, Soul Calibur... is kind of the gold standard
for end boss for you, really?
Yeah, I would say. I think Street Fighter has never done it well. Although I don't know. I guess the original M. Bison was.
I just say you just furiously pissed some people off. They just like threw shit across the room at you.
Yeah. Well, I'm not. I am no.
I should sell Jeff Cannata posters for them to burn in effigy.
I am. You should. You'd make a lot of money.
$20 a tweet.
I am no Brian Leahy when it comes to fighting games, so maybe I'm speaking from ignorance. But.
I don't think it's exclusive to fighting games. I was trying to think of the perfect example where you get to the end boss, and how it's done is they just have like a longer health bar or something like that, and like all of a sudden a rocket launcher, where before, you know, would kill a human with one hit, and now you're on the boss and it takes off, you know, an eighth of their energy.
Yeah.
Still the same rocket. Like, do you need like a story explanation for it? Like, this end boss, you know, because of the mystical powers of the Nether Realm, is able to deflect one out of four attacks, or I mean, I don't know. Would that make it?
I mean, there's a certain fun for puzzle bosses, which is sort of the history of games. You know, you have to hit them at a certain point, place, or there's a certain pattern or whatever. There's a certain fun in that, but
well, that's Mario.
I was just
using it as an example.
But my favorite is like what, for example, Halo does, or in the best Halo games, Reach and the first one, where the big end battle is just steeper odds
against all odds.
It's against a huge army rather than one guy.
You see, we've changed the discussion now. We were talking about fighting games.
I know.
If we get into like a boss discussion, I think I've already like been pretty well established that I'm not big on bosses, especially not in games where they don't seem to fit with what the rest of the games are about. I agree with you about Halo. Completely agree.
Yeah.
However, in a fighting game, you know, as much as I dislike parts of the, or maybe as much as I dislike the balancing that they applied to the boss in Mortal Kombat, I do sort of have this, I mean, the whole rest of the game in that arcade mode is like really tapping that traditional vibe. I feel like you gotta have that guy at the end. You gotta have that guy at the end.
All right. I'm probably in the minority on this opinion, but
and especially
it just feels
when it's
like not fun. It's like, oh, okay, he just can ignore my attacks.
But does he yawn when he does it and look away like,
no, that I would
dude,
like.
You're not losing quarter. You're not losing quarters, number one. And then when you do beat him, you're like, fuck yeah, I beat you, asshole.
Yeah.
And you can't have fuck yeah, I beat you, you asshole, unless he's like the asshole.
I guess.
He's got to be the asshole for you to be like excited about it like that. And that is sort of like the climax of getting there through arcade mode and doing that. Like, then there's so many other ways to play the game.
Yeah, there's so many other ways to play the game. That's a very good point.
So
I tend to just go and play them in the other ways.
Yeah. We talked Chris Tilton into buying the stick, too. Did you see
dude,
that?
Dude, that stick is... We should talk about that for a second.
The stick is ridiculous.
It's gorgeous.
Is unbelievable. I mean, I'm thinking about buying it. It's silky smooth. It feels like somebody just took a hacksaw to an arcade cabinet and handed you the front.
So they basically did. Those are the guys we talked about. Those are the guys who make the MAME cabinet gear. And
yeah.
And the quality of the componentry that is in that thing is...
It's wonderful. I mean, I was playing on my old Hori stick, which I've thought was decent. And after playing on that thing, I'm like, oh, I can't use this piece of crap anymore.
Well, you know, it was an interesting discussion that we were having about whether or not those, you know, some of those sticks are better attuned to 3D fighters. We need to have a little more quick ability to hit 8-way run.
Yeah, okay.
You know, whereas,
I'll give you that. But it does feel chintzy compared to that sweet thing.
Dude, that stick on that thing is
it's feels. I mean,
you
it
know
feels
exactly.
So good.
There is not a shadow of a doubt in your mind, just from the lightest sensitivity, lightest touch on the stick, exactly what position the stick is in and what input you're giving to the machine.
It's about the resistance that it gives you when you press in a direction, and it's also about the feeling of the buttons.
Well, it's nice to play Mortal Kombat with the Mortal Kombat layout. You know, with the 5-star button grid or whatever it is, where, yeah, it might not be as versatile of a stick as, you know, the Street Fighter 4 stick or some of the Hori sticks, but playing more, it does. It's that subtle difference where you're like, I'm at the arcade. And I believe it has an 8-way gate where I know the Mad Cat Street Fighters is a 4-way. And it's just those little differences when you're like, yeah, I'm playing Mortal Kombat again now. It's really nice.
And there's
nice.
Tiny little touches too, like we were noting the pad underneath so you can rest it on your knees comfortably. Its size and weight make it feel there's no chance of it coming off your lap when you do something.
You know what I was really impressed by, especially by that group of us sitting down and playing, was that I think that one of the clearest signs that they really got Mortal Kombat right again was that everybody wanted to play. Whether they were a fighting fan or not, they all like, oh, I remember playing Mortal Kombat. I remember my favorite characters and I want to play. Not oh yeah, whatever. Like, you know, a lot of times if you're at a group party and you bust out like the fighting game, you'll have like, of course, you'll have like the people who are into fighting games. They'll be like crowding around and that'll be the thing. But then the other folks will like wander off to the kitchen or whatever. Like, instead, just the opposite here. It's like people wanted to play, and then they'd, like, play until their thumbs were tired.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I want to play. I want to play. I want to play. And it's really interesting how it has that effect. I'm not sure, you know, exactly what the secret sauce is. I think it's partly the approachability of the game. I was also starting to think, like, I wonder if the whole, you know, like parts of it are so over. If, like, the whole over-the-top craziness of it with the, you know, the violence of it and even, like, the thought of the fatalities and everything just makes it all sort of, like, oh, you know what? This shit's just crazy. We can have fun with it.
Yeah. I think there's some truth to that for sure.
You know, it just sort of lets down your inhibitions. You're just sort of like, ah, this is completely silly. Come on, I'm fighting with a reptile.
Yeah, and I'm doing a handstand and then my legs are twisting your torso in half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'll do something that will look cool. Like Street Fighter, watching some of those matches are awesome if you know the frames and you know the chess that's going on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. But just for the average person, it's like, oh, you're doing that. But watching blood spurting, like you can go in Mortal Kombat and mash buttons and you might not win, but you will do one awesome move where the guy splatters somewhere. And that feels good. It gives you that fuck yeah moment. Where
it's like the Eddie Gordo game.
Eddie Gordo.
Tekken?
Oh, yeah.
You know, what's the name of that? Capoeira. He's the capoeira fighter dude who's always like, blah, 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 blah. Like, and like, people would just like smash buttons because he'll just start moving all over the place. And he looks cool. Yeah. All right.
Well, I want to talk about Dragon Age 2.
Okay.
Because I finished it.
Awesome. Congrats, dude. Way
to go.
Thank
you. My last save game was just north of 65 hours.
Really? Why?
And I did as many quests as I possibly could. I didn't skip any quest that was in my quest log. I tried to do as much as I could. Clearly, I still, judging by my achievements unearned, there's things that I missed. Don't know how I missed them. But I have some strong feelings about that game. Obviously, I played it for 65 hours. I liked it.
You must like it. I hope.
But when you're playing that long, the prime complaint about this game really hits home, which is it's not about exploration anymore. And I think that's a major component of role-playing games, is exploring a world and finding new places. And the fact that a game of that length and breadth and depth is in one set of locations, and there are not that many of them, and they even though there aren't that many of them, they aren't filled with interesting nooks and crannies. They are pretty plain and pretty linear and pretty, you know, it's just a set path in each place you go. That said, the layer of story that's placed upon those is very impressive. And it almost feels like a TV series or something else that's episodic, or like a sitcom even, where, you know, in a sitcom like in Seinfeld, there's like three places that they go. You know, and you got nine seasons of Seinfeld in, you know, in his apartment and in the
diner.
Cafe. And
but actually, I think that might actually be at the diner. And
yeah, I mean, there's, you know, the random times when they're out on the town. But for the most part, it's in these, you know, they find new story elements to place. And that's how this game feels. And the
you get to go to Steinbrenner's office.
No, you know, all the character stories are very satisfying and fulfilling when they get to their proper end. I'd love to talk massive spoilers.
I think that you're at a point where you can talk about what you want to. I can tell you this much. From what I've heard about Dragon Age and the games that are out there and other games, I'm not going to play it. I'll just be honest. I'm not going to play it.
Why is that?
For one thing, the exploration for me is a really big deal.
Yeah.
And the idea of the world not being, like, I tend to use the word, I think a lot, and maybe this is like what just strikes me is like the way it not being furnished, like there not being enough things in the world to bring it together. Like, you're not the only person who's given that complaint.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's apparent right from the outset, and then you have 50 more hours, you know, it's like,
so with those pieces and the, not to sound like a fanboy, but the consoleification of it, like not being able to play it on PC and pull my camera out and command tactically the way I like to play that sort of game, or what my expectation and hope for that game was.
Yeah.
There's just too many other good games.
And okay, well, let me label spoilers. So if you're on the other side of the room doing something,
run right now.
Walk gingerly toward your playback device.
They all die at the end. Ha ha ha.
No. That's not true.
Trying to ruin it for everybody.
A 65-hour experience that
called
I had.
Dragon Age, and there are no dragons.
No, that's not true. I kicked the shit out of a lot of them. But it ends in a cliffhanger?
Oh, God. This one ends in a cliffhanger, too?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That's a lot of game to play to end in a cliffhanger. And
is it one hand holding a Stallone-style cliffhanger or two-arm backwards facing the camera Tom Cruise-style cliffhanger?
It's a little frustrating, and I think a third game could be very cool, tying up these loose ends. But, you know, the end does what we have talked about, the Halo kind of thing, where there are some bosses, but it's mostly just getting through hordes and hordes of people, and that's cool. And there's there are some wonderful story moments that happen at the end, particularly because I had a relationship with Anders, who is the wizard that you start with. And it ended up being a gay relationship, which, of course, is only because I'm a male lead character. If I'd have been a female lead character, the story would have been the same, and they would have been a heterosexual relationship. But
did you have any of those glitches in the relationship stuff towards the ending?
What do you mean?
I have only read about. Apparently, there were things where it doesn't matter who you created, you know, relationships with as the ending played out. It says, like, you know, you ended up, and obviously I haven't played the game, you end up paired with so-and-so, or because of this relationship, as it's kind of tying things together and it wasn't the choices you made? Or did yours coincide with the choices you made throughout the game?
Mine coincided with the choices you made. I don't even understand how that could be, but I had a relationship with Anders. I also had sex with two other characters in the game, but I was gay married to Anders. And
so did you cheat on him?
Yeah, but he didn't seem to mind, oddly.
You dog.
Honestly, that kind of happened by accident, because it makes it really easy for that to happen. And I
mean, look what they were wearing. How could you not?
He has like a half beard. It's amazing. But I will say, he has a massive turn that is unexpected. Oh God! I thought we could talk about this like adults, but I guess not. He betrays the group in a big way, and because I had this relationship with him, it really
hurt you.
It was much more impactful than it would have been. So I highly recommend if you're thinking of not doing that because I don't want to be gay in a game.
All right. Since we've talked about this now. That was actually one of the things that came up in the last week's show thread. Did you read the comment one of the listeners had about we've been talking about strong female characters, and he asked, what do you think about having a strong gay character? And it was interesting because he went on to explain, hey, I'm heterosexual and I was playing Dragon Age.
Right.
And the first romantic overludes that came towards me were from guys. And
right.
I didn't really know what to make of this. And I'll tell you my take, and then I'll throw this out there for you guys. I think that we're all still, you guys will be like, well, hell yeah, you are. We're also a little immature in how we handle games. Mm-hmm. And so we get caught up in the sexuality nature of it. And as someone else pointed out a little lower in the thread, think about The Wire and Omar, mm-hmm. who turned out to be gay.
Right.
But that wasn't that wasn't anything that was an identifying piece of who he was, because his character was focused on what he was as the gangster.
Right.
He did a lot of stuff. Like, you know, he's money laundering and he's like running drugs. But basically it was all about who he was and how he interacted within the gang. And that was just sort of a sliver of personality adding to what the layers of his character were.
Yeah.
And we tend to, because we're still immature in the way games come together, get caught up in this conversation about Anders and like we just talked a lot about he's gay, but actually, funnily enough, I don't know that much because I haven't played the game about who he is, why he's important, what was cool about him.
Well, he's very important. The whole
but you see what I'm saying?
Game is
you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so the reason that, and then to wrap this up for me about whether or not I care about the sexual orientation of a character in a game, the answer is actually I don't. I would find it difficult as a heterosexual man to project into a role-playing character that was homosexual. But at the same time, I would suspect that someone who was homosexual would look at a heterosexual lead character, and if it's
Absolutely.
Being played up stupidly like this,
Absolutely.
If it's like just, well, we're going to be all overt about our sexuality, then why on earth should I expect them to buy into that character as role-playing? Because for them, it's going to be equally odd.
I think
we're just all being immature.
I think the very important thing for us to underline here is that Anders is not a gay character. Anders is a character that is... you can have a relationship with in the game.
So do you
if
think
you start the game as a female, you can have a relationship with him that is heterosexual. If you start the game as a male,
so maybe they
wrote a character that is a potential relationship interest for the main character, and they allow you to select your gender.
So do you feel like then they did what I'm sort of hoping people will aspire to of not marginalize, but downplay the orientation because it's just part of it's more important that you have the relationship with him.
Yes.
Not whether or not you're gay or not.
To the game's credit, it treats it like a relationship. There is no...
That's cool.
There is no
that's
reference
really cool.
to your gender. There is no reference to whether or not that's odd or it is a relationship that you have. Every other character comments on it. They're happy for you when you are happy in that relationship. And I am 100% certain that that would play out all the same regardless of the gender you choose
See,
as your main character. Now, I have no doubt that it's going to creep out a lot of people, and that's unfortunate. But
it's just challenging.
But I feel like it's to the game's credit and to the designer's credit that they created a world in which these were the potential relationship that you have, and they're not going to change the game based on your selected gender. And at no point do they make any reference to it. It's handled in a completely appropriate, this is a relationship that you can't have.
I'd probably be able to cruise through that because then it like makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of times, again, and maybe I'm projecting my immaturity into like too broad a general terms, but I feel like a lot of times in games that once the subject of sexuality comes up, and I think the same thing applies, whether it's like just like we're looking at the boobs on Lara or something, it's like we immediately just like jump right off the cliff into like 12-year-old land.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that the game is adult in a certain sense where it can treat those things with a level of maturity and it's not about titillation. And then on the other hand, every character model in the game that's female, even if it's your mom in the game or any 60-70-year-old woman, has bodacious tatas.
Yeah, they're banging.
It's like, why do you have to speak out of both sides of your mouth like that? Why can't...
Dude, silicon was very cheap in the Middle Ages.
I guess.
There's an abundance of silicon.
They buck some...
And they didn't know better yet.
It's just unfortunate that that has to be... I mean, you can have a character, like, of course, Isabella in the game, who I also had sex with, is that character. She's very sexual.
But you see what I'm talking about? Is like, we have this ability to like immediately drop into 12-year-old land.
Well, I mean...
You just did it too.
Yeah, of course.
But isn't that weird?
Unfortunately, we're not as evolved as we should be on this show. And that has precedent. But...
Dude, I willingly cop to being immature about it. But I think it's kind of odd.
Odd that you're immature about it?
I think it's kind of odd that I'm that immature about it. I don't really understand that part of my personality. I don't really understand why I'm like so quick to be like, yeah, I fucked her. Like, but
well,
it's like a video game. It's silliness.
But I also think the comments are made and like a lot of the puns and stuff, they're not made to be serious. It's funny. It's a cheap laugh. It's a joke.
What you're making fun of is the mentality.
Right. I mean, it's not like saying I'm above it, but it's like, you know, you see some guy that's super buff and you're just like, oh dude, that dude's buff, and you high five. Like, it's immature or whatever, but it's the same thing. Like when you see Marcus Fenix or whatever, and he's ripped and huge, and that's the same level, the flip side of things, right? Where it's like a dude and you're like dude broing it around, where it doesn't necessarily need to be or I guess better example is Bulletstorm, where it's self-referential, where it's like, this is immature and it's stupid and it's fun. And I think, at least for me, and I believe for you guys on this show, when you make comments like that, maybe it does show a true immaturity. But I don't think so. I think it's just saying it's a quick joke, and we're getting bogged down. Back to basketball.
Yeah, exactly. What we're really here to talk about.
But I am stupidly immature about this stuff because I'm not going to sit here and say also that I don't like looking at like crazy chicks inside ridiculous costumes in video games.
Well, I think we've gotten sidetracked on... I mean, I'm more interested in talking about the strengths and weaknesses of this particular game. And
pros and cons!
I think a strength is that... And the whole reason I brought this up is that the relationship that I started, whether it be heterosexual or homosexual, I'm not uptight enough to have that matter to me. But the fact that I had a relationship with that character informed the end of the game in a really interesting way that far too few games allow me to feel or provide an experience akin to.
Yeah, yeah. I hear what you're saying.
And I mean, because he does a massive important thing that you actually, at least I don't know how different the game can play out. In fact, I'm afraid that it doesn't play out differently enough to justify all the choices that I made. But I helped him do something, and then he completely betrayed me, you know? And I felt like, oh my God, not only have I helped you, but I have this relationship with you. How could you do that? You know, it's a really interesting story moment. The other point I want to make is that, one of the big things we talked about the first time we talked about this game early on is you saying, oh, you don't know what it's about yet, and there's no like big bad, and there's no save the world storyline. I was impressed how all three acts of the game, which are about very different things and take place 3 years apart each time, they all kind of come together in a really interesting way, and they all have repercussions at the end. But the game isn't about one thing. It does feel episodic. It does feel like this is a group of characters, and they get into certain adventures, and it culminates into one massive event, but those adventures weren't always leading up to that. It's just living the life of these guys for 9 years, and it's really cool. It feels more like a novel or like an episodic thing, and it doesn't have to be you're saving the world from day one. You start as a peasant and you end up saving the world. It's stuff happens, you get into adventures.
Jersey Shores.
These are the tales we tell.
Would it have been better as that, as a story or as a Dragon Age novel or interactive comic or something? It's aside from the gameplay, where it sounds like the best part about this is the story and the relationships and the feelings you get, and the worst part is you're doing the same things over and over and over again.
Yeah, I'm not saying it would be better as a book. I'm saying it's a really cool choose-your-own-adventure game.
Sure.
And with combat that is fun, but not noteworthy in any particular way.
But the story
way.
Got you to 65-plus hours.
Yeah, wanting to see how this all plays out.
That's a lot of investment.
Yeah, and I didn't skip anything. I wanted to find out every little bit about these people, and there's people that fall out of your party and come back, and there's twists and turns that happen, and you really get to know all these characters even more than I think the first Dragon Age. So it's an interesting game that has major flaws, but will always resonate for me as an experience that I cherish.
That sounds beautiful. I like the way you summed that up.
Thank you.
It's a meaningful moment that you'll always cherish. I'll always cherish this moment. That's like when you decide which one of the girls you're giving the rose, right?
Yes, to go back to the other part of the game. It's hard to have a adult conversation, I guess. You know, it's I don't know. We can talk about
better or worse than one. If you it's a binary decision.
Worse, yeah. I don't know how to do it a binary. It's
worse. It's zero or one. That's how binary. So
I don't understand.
Or...
Are you speaking English? Yeah. It's worse in many ways and better in others. I think here's the one thing I will say. In the first game, I loved the fact that there are all these shades of gray decisions.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I've talked about that a lot where I set the controller down and I really thought it over. Didn't really feel that so much in this game, especially at the end where you really are asked to choose this side or that side. And it actually doesn't end up really mattering because you fight both people. But to what I was saying before about not knowing what you're doing at the beginning,
Yeah. It's
really a game where I think what they set out to do is you decide who the big bad guy is at the end.
That's interesting.
You decide that. You get to
choose.
That's
an interesting idea.
But in the end, it kind of was a cop-out where it's like, they're both the big bad guy.
I'd like a game. I'd like to see us get to an era, by the way. It was interesting you were talking about Anders and like he betrayed me. It would be very fascinating to get to a point in gaming where we're able to develop AIs on a character such as Anders where like there's a threshold. You know, he's supposed to betray you, right? But were you to develop the relationship appropriately or strongly enough, he has conflicted emotions about how to handle it, and it really dynamically can change. I mean, maybe he still betrays you, but maybe he betrays you and leaves you a back door on how to get out of it. Or
I think that the game tries to do that.
That's pretty cool.
Like I said, I only played through my playthrough, so I don't know what other things, but I tried to befriend everybody in my party, and there's certain moments where Isabella does things where I got her back into my party, and I've imagined there if you were a rival to her and not a friend, she might not have come back.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think they're attempting to do that. Absolutely.
Well, we're doing great. We're getting one game per segment this time. This is awesome. We got Mortal Kombat in there. Mortal Kombat and Dragon Age. Like, why? What is with these guys? They're way behind. Are we going to do any new games in the next segment, or we just keep on trucking through? We got iOS stuff from Spicer. Someone played. Did you play Outland?
I did.
Wait, we'll talk about Outland because I'm hyped for that. I want to know if I should buy it. You know, like, I don't know. Over
the answer is yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
All right. So stick around. We'll have all that. Plus, we'll be talking a lot about the PlayStation Network getting hacked, a new console from Nintendo coming up at E3, all that and more when Weekend Confirmed returns.
It was actually a really cool human communication negotiation that we went through. Five high fives, go for left, for left. Seven high fives for right, for right. Five high fives, go for left, seven high fives for right, for right. An evolving shorthand communication system that, like, even though Billy could talk, he, like, after we talked a little bit and had, like, our negotiated system of how shit was going to work when we ran around rooms, yeah, seven and five, 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 five.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
That's
Houdini. Before we go any further, let's be friends is a word to use every day.
That's right.
We are Houdini. We are Houdini. Let's be friends. Most of the time you use it in the wrong way. You can look the word up again and again and again. The dictionary doesn't know the meaning of friends.
I clearly did 7 high fives. What are you doing?
Let's be friends, 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 friends. Let's be friends, 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 friends.
I have a surprise for you.
It's proof positive that with what Del Rio does on this show every week, that anyone can be a singer on a hot hit song if they have an awesome producer. Because you guys are laying down hits, and I know it's not you. You know what I'm saying?
What do you mean you know it's not us?
Not you.
What do you mean you know it's not us?
I'm pretty sure it's us, dude.
I'm pretty sure it's us. I'm pretty sure. The beginning five high fives?
That sounds like, reminded me of Michael's Do the Scorn from Threat Level Midnight. Like, step to the left and shake a hand. I don't know. You could have your own Dougie, Jeff, from Five High Fives.
Yay.
Teach me how to. Sorry.
Portal, what's your jam about that?
So we should take him to the surface.
I wanted to touch on Portal 2 a little bit again this week. What I love about Portal, and it kind of goes back to what I was saying about Red Dead Redemption a while ago.
Are we going
to
spoil?
No.
Okay.
I am not. I'm going to do my best not to spoil, so I will try my darndest not to.
So you're not going
to
talk about the thing after the place with the deal?
When the whole guy goes,
yeah.
And you're like,
oh my God.
Yeah. No. I'm going to use one line of dialogue that I do not believe is spoilery in any form. But what I love about Portal 2 is that it's probably one of the most linear games out there. You have almost no freedom in what you're going from entrance to exit. But mm-hmm. It feels to me more open and free form and exploring than Red Dead, GTA, or any of these sandbox games. Because in those games, it's like, yeah, you can go anywhere in the world. But then when you engage in an activity like poker, you're like, now I'm playing poker. Or go kill these guys. It's like, okay, I'm going to go into dead aim and bang, 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 and get all of them. Whereas Portal, I feel like I'm figuring out the solution, but I know I'm not. I guess I'm figuring out the solution, but I'm not making it up. I'm playing chess one move behind.
Yeah.
And the programming and the thought that goes into that with the team at Valve that did that is amazing, because you complete the challenge and you're like, oh, I totally did that. And there's one time, this is the line of dialogue, if you don't want to know anything, I'm going to say one thing right here. Or after you complete a challenge, it says something along the lines of, oh, you did it that way. That's so creative. We had no idea someone could do it like that. And I haven't got back to that point yet in my replay of the game to see if it happens again, which I'm almost sure it does.
Yeah.
But when you hear that, you're like, fuck yeah, I did. Yeah, my timing was awesome on that.
The magic of what they do is that it feels like creativity and it's just discovery.
Yeah.
But it feels like I'm creatively coming up with my own way out of the situation, and I'm just discovering what they intended
to find. The only way to do it.
But
not enough games give you that feeling. We were talking on the break, like, what our favorite type of game is, and mine is Portal. Because I don't know I'm sure there are other examples, but even levels, other games
Braid,
where you can...
Limbo.
Yeah.
I would say are the two.
Yeah.
That are in that
indie
genre.
Indie games. And it's such an amazing feeling to feel free, and okay, I don't lie, there's one more line of dialogue from the game where it pokes fun at it, where he's, you know, I'm off rails. Now just follow those rails. We're letting you know, like, you feel free, but no, you're going left to right, essentially. And open world games, I want to encompass more of that freedom. Instead of saying, here's this big sandbox, go engage in these very then linear activities, somehow incorporate that Portal level of discovery into something where you can go anywhere you want.
Yeah, I would say that as the game trends, and I'll be careful how I say this, but as the game transitions out of solve the puzzle and into traverse the environment, it, I would say, feels a little more restrictive, as in there are fewer places.
I'm so glad you said that.
There are fewer places to place your portal that work.
And
so it becomes, well, I'm just going to place my portal on the one place it works and figure it out from there. But I think the reason for that is that if they gave you full freedom at the level, at the scope that the game gets to, your brain would explode. And you couldn't possibly...
So back to the hyperbole that quickly.
What do you mean?
I don't know. I think maybe I'm broken. I got to... So I've gotten to... Can we be spoilery a little bit? Because I'm only about halfway through, but I want to be spoiler-y.
Give people the time to walk across the room. Because for some reason, everybody listens to the show with their thing coming out of someplace that's far away from where they actually are.
So we're enjoying a fine beer. I'll get another beer here. And I'm glad that young Ryan went and got us beer because I needed one.
After that conversation.
I usually sit in my house with the windows open and listen to the show and have my wife and her car drive by with it on really loud.
That's awesome.
So it's a run if I have to pause it. I understand.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I think that's probably sufficient, don't you?
Yes.
Okay. So I got to the part where the game changes.
Yes.
Which I thought was, first of all, the way the dramatic moment of it changing was...
change?
The first one. I guess there's another one. But the first...
we're spoiling it. Just say what happens.
When you're like when Whitley shows up and you're at you have five more tests. He's like, just hang in there, do five more tests. And like four tests later, like the wall comes crashing down and you're like, make the escape, which is like chapter four is the escape.
Yes.
And I found chapter four, the escape, to be cool, like... intellectually and creatively, because I love this whole idea of like, oh, now I'm behind the curtain, you know, I'm inside the behind the scenes area, and it's like going behind, it's like taking the background tour at Disneyland, right? It's like, oh, this is how this shit works, this is really cool.
Right.
The game, I was like, okay, now I'm in a first, now I'm at the end of Half-Life where I'm jumping around, like doing a first person jumping game. First person jumping games are not good.
To me, that feeling didn't last long. To me, that was more of a plot,
I hope it doesn't.
Plot point to get you to the next traversal ways of solving puzzles. And I think, like, for me, the way the game played out with that, and I think is maybe a knock, people say it's too short, it always feels like you're about to beat it. I feel like the game lends itself, and for me, it was an all-nighter, it lends itself to a bender session where you're like, the escape. You're like, oh, I'm almost done. Two more levels, I'll have this bad boy done. And it keeps you going like that. And I feel like maybe you haven't gotten far enough. And Jeff, I don't know if you disagree, but I feel like it does that to set up the next step where you're solving puzzles and you're exploring. You're not just...
Yeah, so I got to like the next part where you're like in the factory and there's like some walls you can shoot stuff onto. And so I started doing that. And it was fine. I started to get back into it. But and maybe this is just the way my mind is wired. I found that I was sort of thinking... Well, you know, I get where I'm projecting because I haven't obviously gotten a lot further yet. But, like, I get the idea of incorporating portals into the adventure game sort of thing, and like where else it could go. And I hope it's cool. I'm gonna play it. I'm digging on it. I don't want people to think like this is like last week we were talking about Prey 2. I was not shitting on Prey 2
because there's no sphincter doors. You can't.
I thought there's no exactly. It's all clogged up. I thought Prey 2 was really cool. I just was a little. I think we probably did focus too much on the name thing.
Yeah,
but. Whatever. But, like, it was sort of weird just because I really liked... I mean, I know I'm in the minority, but I
would
anyway,
just, I would
so
just,
not get sidetracked on that. To come back to this is that, for me, the zen of just doing those fucking portal puzzles, I could probably... They're like Sudoku to me. Like how some people have, like, books of fucking Sudoku, and I'm like, how can you do that? They're just number puzzles. They're like, oh, but they're always different. I could probably spend... an easy 20 hours just doing...
How come you haven't finished it then?
Just doing portal test rooms.
You will do more of them. Just
like that
don't
part I
jump
love.
To any conclusions
okay,
about how you feel about them. The game until
what?
You've gotten...
Portal to the conclusions. Your jump doesn't get you that far.
Yeah, don't jump.
Just keep playing. When you get to the liquids, I feel like...
The gels.
Yes.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, and that's all cool.
Yes. Just finish the game. We'll have a new talk.
I thought dramatically that like I love that like you look over on the wall of that room that you get away from and there's like a big heart in symbols on the wall because Goddess really loves us but hates us. It's like the spurned lover and like it's so like that whole dynamicism is fantastic. I really love that. But then like running through catwalks and chill the fuck out, man.
Right now, this is a terrible example, but you're like talking about Titanic and you've watched the first hour and you're like, there's not even a fucking iceberg in this movie.
Or like you haven't seen Titanic 2 yet, so you don't know what really happens.
That's called Raise the Titanic. It wasn't very good.
Oh, there's a Titanic 2.
I want to talk about Outland.
You should talk about Outland.
That's outlandish.
It looks awesome in video.
It is awesome.
And it's from Housemarque, who I think are really cool pokes.
Yeah, they are good pokes.
Good, cool folks.
Are
Are you a fan of the Metroid and Super Metroid?
Super.
Super?
Yeah. Yeah, what?
Then you will like Outland.
Like, from a difficulty standpoint, or
no, from a gameplay style standpoint. It's Metroid. It's Metroid meets the original Prince of Persia on, you know, Apple IIe. It's
like Meshner's.
Yeah.
Well, whoa.
Yes. It's Metroid, it's backtracking, it's push pause and look at a giant map that looks exactly like Metroid. It's can't go to that thing yet because I don't have the power up to go there, but I know I'll be able to go there eventually. Huh. It's jumping on platforms that have enemies going in circles around them with spikes on their backs.
Okay, that's cool. I like that.
It's great. Overlay that with an awesome, awesome, awesome graphic style that is, it's that very in vogue thing that's happening right now, which is sort of the shadowy two color kind of where the background is where all the color lives and the foreground it's very dark, which looks great. The animation is really wonderful. Lots of great animation on your main character. The novel aspect that they add into it is this concept of light and dark, which is really just red and blue. For some reason, it's called light and dark. And you get the ability to walk through the light and dark world realms, and you can toggle between them using the right bumper. And because I'm playing on 360 because I couldn't get it on PSN. Anyway, so there
By the way, that really sucks for developers right now.
I can imagine. I can only imagine. It's bad. Anywho, a lot of the environments are rife with these dangers that are color-coded. So you have a spewing fountain of red dots that are basically bullets flying through the air that if you get hit by them, it takes off a heart of life. But if you adopt your red light or dark, I guess that would be, dark form, you can walk right through the red.
So wait, then you don't have to do the timing part?
No. But right next to that red fountain, there might be a blue fountain. And the blue fountain will hurt you. So if you switch to blue, blue doesn't hurt you, but red does. So you have to leap in the air at a certain point, flip your...
Oh, so now they've got these things intermingled.
Exactly. Add to that platforms that are moving that are red or blue.
Okay, so it's starting to sound actually hard.
When it's a red platform, you'll fall right through it unless you're red colored. Or if it's a blue platform, you'll fall right through it unless you're blue colored. So
how hard is this game?
I didn't find it to be particularly hard. I find the control to be really spot on and lovely. It's
okay.
I mean, I did die several times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
but
it doesn't feel cheap. You didn't get frustrated. Okay.
No.
So I was starting to get a little concerned there. I'm like, okay, well, this sounds like it could get really complicated quickly.
It's similar to how Lost in Shadow felt to me when I played that on the Wii. Where
good reference point.
Yeah. Great, good game, too, I think.
It sounds kind of like, I'll probably say it wrong, but like Ikaruga, shooter. In terms of like the dots,
which is which is a dodge shooter.
Perhaps right. I shouldn't have said
more
bullets when they're little colored beams of danger. It's right. It's much more Metroid than it is.
Did you just say colored beams of danger?
Yeah, which is the name of my new band, by the way. So you'll get into these situations where you like leap off a red platform, have to change to blue in midair to land on the blue platform. And, you know, dodging around. And then you get all these wonderful traversal upgrades where you can do slides, you can do teleports, you can do, you know, wall jump. It's a wonderful traversal thing.
It sounds fun.
As well.
It's like 800 Microsoft points.
Yeah. And it looks gorgeous. It is awesome. And you got a sword to kill stuff. So instead of the shooting you would find in Metroid.
Satisfying length for backtracking and doing all that fun stuff.
Well, I haven't played the whole game yet, so I don't know how long it is. But yeah, there's moments where you know you'll go all the way up to the right to flip the switch that flips the switch down to the left. So you have to go back. But now when you go back, things are different because you have a new power that you can go back with. And cool. Super cool because I love those games. I love Metroid And I love a great platformer and having all these wonderful traversal abilities that you get, and that light and dark mechanic really adds something. So highly recommend it.
I don't have time, but
I'm tickling my controller.
Yeah,
at the moment.
I'm every time I watch the video, because I've actually go back and watch the video like three or four times because it looks really cool. I'm like, that looks really cool. I totally want to play that. There's so many games I want to play right now.
Yeah, like, and this is a lull.
I know. And like, not to be forgotten, Patapon 3 did actually come out last week, yeah? A week ago. And of course, you're screwed right now in getting it, if you want to get it over PSN. But there's so many games to play. So many games to play. Christian, what else have you been playing?
I've spent a lot of time with my iOS devices. I jumped on Dead Space for the iPad and NBA Jam for the iPhone when they were both 99 cents over Easter. And I'm a big fan of, one, trying to find the good in games, and two, it's kind of the old adage, or it's not that old anymore because it's internet age, but the best camera you have is the camera you have with you, whereas for me, the best game I have is on the device I have with me. And so NBA Jam, I think, is the perfect example of that gameplay where it's like, would it be better with physical buttons? Yes. But is it an awesome, great game to have on your iPhone when you're sitting somewhere bored for a little bit and you want an arcade experience? Because NBA Jam doesn't require precise button pressing. You know, it's not like Street Fighter or, you know, a very technical game. And the arcade game transfers over really well if you've played the updated 360 or Xbox or Wii version. I mean, it's the same. It doesn't have the new over-the-shoulder 3D part, but like the arcade game is there and intact. And it's just, I feel like oftentimes we look at all the negatives in games because maybe that's what people want to hear about. Jeff, you do a great job of touting the high points, and I think this show in general does, but it's like, is this the most ideal game ever? No. Was it 99 cents, and have I played it for, you know, several hours already because it's fun and I have it? Yeah, and I think Dead Space for the iPad is the same thing. Where
there's that 99 cent problem, though, right? I mean, that's a thing that you know, was it Tim Sweeney from Epic that was talking about that? About how 99, like the latest rant, another person ranting about 99 cent games killing the industry.
Well, even at $4, I feel like it's a bargain. And Dead Space for the iPad does a lot of the same stuff where it's really cool. And what this device, as I'm looking at the iPad, what this device can do technically and graphically is amazing. But one thing I think is interesting, more so on the iPad than on the iPhone, is I feel like playing an iPad game, it must be how non-gamers feel when you hand them a 360 or PS3 controller. Like, I don't quite know how to hold the device every time I play. It's like, do I use my thumbs? Because in Dead Space in particular, you're navigating with your thumbs, but then you need to touch a door to open it. And that's a long stretch to move your thumb from over and touch to open the door. And like, every game kind of controls differently. Mm-hmm. You know, Angry Birds is the simple flick and go. And then every time you play a touchscreen game, you have to relearn the skills and tools for how you play it. And even a great simple game, and they talked about it at GDC, is Infinity Blade. I'm still not sure if I'm quote-unquote playing it right. Like, do you play with your thumbs on the pad? I find that I like to set it down and have it rested on the case and use my index fingers because I'm faster that way to do good dodges and parries. And I guess there maybe isn't a right way to play a game, but I feel like with a controller, it's always the same thing. It's here you go, your thumbs do this, your fingers do this, whereas on a touch device, I think it's something. I don't have the answer for developers, but it's, I don't know if I'm holding it right. You know, am I supposed to be doing this with my thumb? Should it be my index fingers? What's the most natural way? When you designed the game, how did you picture me playing it? And I don't know if it comes across for something that's supposed to be a simple device. You know, it's
so
touch,
I think,
interact.
I think what you're hitting at is some of the stuff that, going back to GDC, you know, Mustard was talking about when he was doing his piece on how they had approached at Chair the design of Infinity Blade, and how one of their things was, you know, like we're designing for you holding the device with one of your hands, and everything else is done with one hand. Like, the game has to be playable with one hand.
Yeah.
I think the idea of virtual sticks, does Dead Space use virtual sticks?
It, wherever you put your thumb, virtual sticks. So you're not tied to one aspect of
the
screen.
But so they're mobile or whatever, but right. But wherever you put your fingers is where the virtual sticks pop up. I think that is indicative of some of the trouble that people get into trying to design here is that, yeah, the device can do some really awesome things. I'm looking at some of the screens right here from Dead Space iPad. I remember when Andrea was here and she showed it off, and then the game looked amazing. And immediately we were like, oh man, that looks awesome and blah, blah, blah. And then people were immediately in the forums like, yeah, have you tried to play it?
Yeah. I find that to be a big problem. But did you grab Max and the Magic Marker for 99 cents?
I did not.
It's very cool. I mean, it's basically one of my favorite games ever, Kirby's Canvas Curse.
Max and the Magic Marker for iPad.
Yeah. But to move Max around
It's virtual.
Oh, never mind. I don't want it. See, I'm almost to the point where I'm like, here's the thing that I've come to, because I, you know, now I've had this iPad for a little while longer, and it's funny to me how one of the first games I got based off your recommendation is still, to me, like a great example of what it can do, but a less common example than I had thought it might be. Hunters HD. Mm-hmm. So Hunters is great, and Hunters is a like classic sort of game in that XCOM way, but it so happened that the interface worked perfectly for doing the touchscreen sort of interaction with it. And I can lay in bed and play it, and it's one-handed, and I hold it, and it plays great. But like playing things with virtual sticks stinks.
I agree. Sword and Sorcery. I know
I need to get on that. I know I need to get on that.
I don't want
to
give developers a pass because I feel like there is a better way to do it. And what they said at GDC, what Cher was saying, is a good example. But still, the Dead Space experience on your iPad playing anywhere is pretty cool. Like, I had my headphones on, you know, sitting on a plane. I'm getting this great narrative. It's shocking. I wouldn't say scary, but it's tense. It's frightening. And it has all that stuff. And is it, you know, the best game ever? No. But is it pretty damn awesome for what it is? Yeah. I feel like people often are like, well, this doesn't control perfectly. Again, to go back to Red Dead, neither did running and getting around a boulder in Red Dead. It's still an awesome game. And I feel like the touch devices can do that if you give them a chance. Give touch a chance.
Yeah. Vote for the underdog once in a while.
Because right. No one's buying these things.
No one's buying an iPad.
Yeah.
But there's good stuff out there, and it doesn't get, you know, discussed as often, maybe for the fun that it can be.
Do you have feedback questions this week or no?
I haven't asked any. I was just wondering if anyone was actually on here. But no, we need to get back to doing that. We should be live tweeting. We need to figure out how we're going to do some live interaction with the audience while we're doing the show.
Yeah.
We need to get all these things sorted. We don't have them sorted at the moment.
Ah. Sort some shit out. Spent too much time working on that game flap. Am I right? It's going to catch on, dude.
Good.
And you're going to see sales spike. And guess who's getting all the profits? Not me. God damn it.
The underwear gnomes. That's step three. So what else should we talk about? I don't know. You guys want to know about, we did iOS stuff. Christian, you have anything else you've played lately? Can we talk about?
Those are the big things that I've gone through and played. I did beat Red Dead Redemption, but people don't want to hear me say that I would give it a 7. Overall,
I really? Don't want to hear you. I'd punch you in the face. What the fuck?
It's just the same things I've said. It's an awesome game, great story.
But
the control, it's not doing every little thing. It's not playing poker isn't as good as, you know, Full House poker. Shooting people isn't as good as Gears. Riding your horse isn't as good as Shadows riding.
Some of its parts.
Right, exactly.
And so I feel bad for him, don't you?
Well,
he can't see the forest for the trees. It's sad.
I love that game.
This is sad.
Yeah, it's sad. It's a beautiful forest, but you're just like hung up on each individual
that is
tree.
The most beautiful part of the best part of that game is the scenery. God, I could just ride around and look at the desert, the landscape. But
it's interesting.
People don't want to hear me say that.
It's interesting, though, in retrospect, thinking about how much of a game world they built out that they don't use. There's so many parts of that game world that...
What do you mean they don't use? I'm sure there's crap all over that place that you haven't checked out.
That's what I'm saying, that they don't take you to, that they don't actively engage you to go and see, that you have to go and search out.
Well, there's enough to go and see that there's a go and see, and then there's all kinds of stumble upon or have to go out looking for maps of shit.
Yeah.
You know?
But I'm saying that if you're just like, and it is a fairly long game, if you're just following down the main structure of the plot line, there's a lot of places you won't see that have interesting, you know, well-developed, well, back to your Dragon Age thing. That game world doesn't have those elements to it. Red Dead had that, like, ginormous world with every area seeming to have its own character and pieces that gave it... you know, a signature identity. Like, you knew what, not only did you know you were in Mexico, but you knew which end of Mexico you were in and what town you were in or what area of it's not America, whatever the fake America name is. But, you know, like, are you over here by the big town? Or are you down here by like all the ranches? Are you up on the bluffs? Like, and every place had its character and its signature elements that gave it its character. And yet there were big sections of them you didn't use that much if you didn't go out and do other stuff.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Can I just say quickly, when I said a 7, I'm exaggerating down. It's a great game, but I feel like it sure, whatever.
On record.
Parts.
On record.
Go ahead. Bail yourself out. By the way.
How much is my bail, sir?
By the way,
can I post
bail? Rockstar San Diego, Christian lives in San Diego. So get a hold of me. And
that's okay. The guys who made the game don't live in San Diego anymore.
Oh.
Ouch.
They're not with Rockstar.
Oh.
I'm just saying.
You think they fired them and took their helms away?
Probably.
I can talk about a board game. I know we haven't done board game night yet. And
I'm
we're
not
going to.
I'm not actually bored yet.
Well, you're about to get bored, did.
So are we going to skip the warning? People would be happy to skip the warning.
I was just trying to get you to do it.
Oh, the warning?
Yeah, and you're like, we haven't put that together this week.
And now we're at 25 minutes, and like he's going to start yelling at us. I was going to talk about SOCOM for a minute, but I feel weird talking about SOCOM not being able to talk about multiplayer.
The worst thing we could do is go, what should we talk about? Nobody wants to hear that. Just talk about shit, or don't.
Well, I'm just kind of tired. Like, we were talking about this in the break, how much... both Jeff and I really enjoy playing role-playing games, and I just don't get to play them enough, and they are a big commitment of time. And you know, it's like shooters have really tried to develop storyline and character, and I appreciate Zipper's efforts and the like how they wanted to give SOCOM 4 a personality in the single-player game, but man, it just doesn't work.
Is this an example of what you're saying about id and rage? Should this have not... Because you want SOCOM, and this isn't SOCOM, like, by calling rage,
well, that's a,
rage
you're
and not
right. You know what? That's a
doom.
That, well, on a high design level, yes. On a lower level, like, or on a, you know, on a like, drilling down some level, actually, the game wouldn't work anyway, because the characters are all paper thin, and the situation that they put them in, it wouldn't even hold up to, like... Would not have been an episode on The Unit. I mean, it's just, it's not there. It's like, okay, your game's name is SOCOM, so you're going to be about, you know, the Navy SEALs, who are, you know, the Navy's version of Delta Force, and like they're supposed to be elite guys, and yet you're off with this guy, and it quickly becomes like clearly his vendetta mission. But they never give you any real background. They never give you enough background on him to give a damn about him or why it's there. They introduce you to these two, like it fictitiously takes place someplace in Southeast Asia. And of course, you're like partnered with a couple of Korean operatives and this one Korean woman who becomes like your lieutenant and, you know, like your right hand person. It's like constantly with like she's paper thin and. Like, everyone's paper. Like, there's no depth to any of the characters. You really don't care about any of them. But then the actual action and the missions is not that great either, because all of the things that they send you to do, each event, which to the story would need to have some sort of engagement. Like, I'm going to go take down the defense system on a harbor so that then we can come and assault it. So each time... Like getting to those defense installations is part of the fight. And then once you get those defense installations knocked out, things happen. And that's all well and good if when those things happened and they tried to advance the plot, there was any meaning to it. But really, every single mission, every piece of what you do really feels like it's like really in your face what a designer's note it was. What a, I need to put object of movement here. I need to put like... event object here so that player action takes him to event object A. And at event object A, we will have firefight. And then they will move to event object B. And they
How
will
is that different than any other shooter, though?
It's not that much different. However, in games that have gotten more sophisticated at giving you the story element, at least it's not so transparent that you just get beat over the head with, oh, it's just taking me to the next place to have the next firefight. And like in this game, it so very much feels like that. And then... It brings back the like similar games would be, you know, like of course the Tom Clancy games where you're controlling your teammates and you know you're doing a little tactical maneuvering. The problem is that in the levels, first of all, they don't let you do that enough because for some asinine reason they felt like they had to put in stealth missions. I mean, of course, it's a shooter, you got to have stealth missions, and the stealth missions are disastrous. They have the same problems that stealth missions frequently have of you're assaulting a group of military, paramilitary guys, right? Who all have radios and you figure they're in communication running patrols. You take out guys and the rest of the base just doesn't know that John's no longer there anymore. It's like, wonder what happened to him. I don't know. He's off on patrol someplace. Hmm. So it has that stupidity part to it. It uses the artificial stealth meter, but the artificial stealth meter is so arbitrary that you can literally like sneak right up in front of people who sort of are looking your way. But as long as that stealth meter is down at the bottom, they don't see you. But then suddenly they do see you. And there's really no explanation of why they see you or how they see you or what happened. You can do things like chunk shell casings to try and attract dudes' attentions to like get them to like go and look another direction or something. But the way that they're programmed is so hard fixed that you like literally there would be times where I would be sitting like at the corner of a building trying to get this guy who's around the corner to look the other way and minutely aiming where I was tossing stuff. So it would get just within his field of vision enough. Like I'd be tossing it. I'm like tossing these empty shell cases. I'm tossing. I'm moving over a little. Finally, it moves over to the spot where it's just further enough to the left that he picks it up. He's like, oh, I'm going to go see what that is. It's just so transparently artificial.
Sounds like some game might need PSN back.
Yep, the multiplayer was really fun. I mean, the multiplayer in that game has always been good. One lesson I learned really quick while it was up was that it is SOCOM, and if you've not played SOCOM a lot, SOCOM is at its best when you're playing it in the tactical mode of one kill, one death, and then you know you have to wait to respawn, because in the big matches where everyone is like respawning all the time, it's just grenade chucking. It's not very elegant game. It's a lot of people throwing. I think I made some snarky tweet about eggs and grenade spam or something. It was ridiculous. Like really, the grenade spam in the few matches that I played was just awful. Just awful. It was really annoying. No, it really wasn't fun. And it was, I mean, it's tough balancing, right? You know, like it's like obviously Call of Duty's been through all that, where you like you play those matches where dudes know exactly where to stand, where they chunk a grenade and you're like watching the kill cam and you don't even know where the guy was. You just see this grenade coming over from some ridiculous arc and it like lands at your feet right where you just stepped, and you're like, how on earth would someone know to throw that grenade there?
Yeah.
It's because they've been playing the game for so long. So SOCOM hasn't been out that long, but already people were figuring out, oh, if I like lob grenades in here, I'll probably get kills and stuff. The single player just frustrated me. It wasn't of a level where I was engaged by the characters. It wasn't of a level where I was engaged by the tactical combat part, which had the potential to be the best part, because of course that part actually gets good. You know, we have one team that's supposed to be like your longer range team and your snipers, and one team that's supposed to be your closer assault team. And there are places in the game where it's really fun, where you're like, I'm really having a good time. Like, okay, I'm going to send blue team down here in the front. I'm going to get them positioned. I'm going to get yellow team up here on this catwalk, and they can overlook this, like this courtyard. And then I'm going to advance into here. And as soon as I draw their fire, I'm going to get blue to go this direction and flank, and yellow will overlook. And like all that's working really well. If they did way more of that and didn't do the stealth missions at all and gave the guys a little bit of character, they would have had a great game. I think they would have a really, really stronger game, but that's not what they did.
Sounds more like SOCOM. Am I right?
You're right. So anyway, and I'm gonna get some multiplayer. And there's also cooperative single player, and you can build your own missions. There's a lot to the game, but hopefully we'll be able to play some multiplayer sometime soon.
Yeah,
which we'll talk about when we come back on the other side. We will talk about the PlayStation Network's downfall, where they might be with bringing it back, and what you might be at risk with after the data theft from there. We'll talk about Nintendo's.
What you might be buying. What am I buying now?
That's a great excuse. Like, honey, we got a flat screen. may as well keep it.
Well, I was thinking more like porn sites, but sure, you can get a flat screen if you want. Whatever. It's all good. Anyway, right now we've got the Velvet Chameleon with their song 2.2 Cherry Blossom, The Fire.
Oh, God, I've been in the just forget.
These guys are just asleep at the switch. They're like, what? 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 What?
I had no idea we were back.
We're back.
I'm drinking.
Look at the time. Look at the time. We gotta rock and roll. We have a concert to go to.
This is true.
We have things to do, people to see, more beers to drink, and I don't know.
Dances to dance.
Exactly. So we're going to do the news, and there's no... I just vetoed the news jingle, by the way. Del Rio asked me. I'm like, I don't know.
All right.
I'm not sold on any of them.
There is no consensus.
No.
I might be working on one.
You might
really?
Be, really?
I might be.
Make that happen, dude.
Sweet.
Yeah, we'll see.
Awesome. All right, so, of course, I spent most of my weekend looking at PlayStation Network breach information and writing stories about it. It's been a really tough situation. So I put together, for the show here, this little timeline. Isn't that nice of me? You like timelines?
First the dinosaurs came, then they died, and the Arabs came and bought up all the oil.
No, we're not going...
Airplane reference.
Nice.
For those people that may not get that.
You're not supposed to... You just
well,
drop
I
it.
Didn't want people to think I'm just racist for no reason.
You wanted to make sure they knew you had a reason?
It's a reference. I didn't write the line. I merely repeated it.
I think after reading this, you'll understand. If you haven't been following it, PlayStation Network is currently down. It's been down for a week. It's probably going to be down until next Tuesday or Wednesday when partial services may start being restored. However, they're not going to turn them on until security has been confirmed. They're very worried about that because they got hacked. The thing that one of the primary things that that gamers have been upset about is the way this information has been relayed to them over the course of the past 6 or 7 days. It started on Wednesday when the PlayStation Network went down. And on the blog, they reported that we're aware certain features of the PlayStation Network are down. We'll report back here as soon as we can with more information. On Thursday, they did do an update. And the update on the blog said that while we are investigating the cause of the network outage, investigating, mind you, we're trying to figure out what happened to the PlayStation Network. While we're investigating the cause of the outage, we wanted to alert you that it might be a full day or two before we're able to get the service back up and running. So, you know, Wednesday and Thursday last week, it sounds like something happened. We got, you know, like, you don't know, like maybe we got denial of service attacked. Maybe we had a massive hardware failure. Maybe we had some sort of internal database problem. I mean, who knows what the hell happened, right? And then late on Friday, keep in mind, it was late enough in the day on Friday that most of the folks in my office had gone. Friday was also sort of a holiday, you know, because obviously it was right before Easter. It was Good Friday. Late in the day, we get this post. An external intrusion on our system has affected our PlayStation Network and Curiosity services. In order to conduct a thorough investigation...
Isn't that Curiosity?
Curiosity? Curiosity?
That is Curiosity.
Is it? I don't know. I've never even heard it pronounced. It's their music system. I don't actually care.
Okay.
Is it Curiosity?
I would think.
All right. They are Curiosity systems. I guess that makes sense. In order to conduct a thorough investigation and to verify the smooth and secure operation of our network services going forward, we turned off PlayStation. Wait.
Turned it off? That doesn't sound like it would be a mystery.
We're aware certain functions of the PlayStation network are down. We'll report back as soon as we can with more information. While we're investigating the cause of the network outage, we unplugged it.
But that requires an investigation to find out why. Why did we unplug it?
I'm not saying they did this. I'm going to imply it, but it just reminds me, like, the timing of the release reminds me of, I think it was like in, I forget, like 2005, BP had a refinery blast in Texas near, kind of like near Houston, which is my hometown. And actually, after the Gulf oil spill problem, people looked at BP's records and they found out that they strategically released the press release about the refinery explosion on late in the evening, Good Friday. And they have documentation saying,
are you kidding
me? That they think because of the Easter weekend, it won't get much press because the news will hit on Friday. Things will come up over the Easter weekend. And by the news cycle comes back.
Really? That's a true story?
Oh, yeah. I can link you the CNN article.
I'm inclined to believe this case is a little less nefarious than that, in the sense that it's entirely possible they knew there was a problem. They didn't know the extent to which there was a problem. They knew they had to shut it down. We have to acknowledge the fact that it's down. Let's tell them we're looking into what's going on. The verbiage of that was a little.
There's no way legal wasn't involved with
this.
So
you're one of the.
Of course there was.
You're one of the apologists.
I'm not apologizing. I'm saying.
You are totally apologizing. Knowingly saying that you are investigating the cause of the outage when you are the ones who unplugged the fucking system is disingenuous.
So I agree it's disingenuous. Would it have made a significant difference if they had said, we turned it off, we'll tell you why later?
No. Well, yes. So, yes, it might have, but I think that we can talk about what they should have done in a minute. So suffice it to say, late in the evening on Friday, along with that admission, they said that obviously they had had a external intrusion, and
there. Just to follow up for a second, mm-hmm. there is an interpretation of those words. Investigating the cause, we had to turn it off, and we're investigating the cause of why we had to turn it off.
Oh yeah, those words were crafted for a very specific purpose.
And I agree that it's intentionally misleading.
By the way, you are now on the apologist team.
I don't think they have. I'm cool just jackets, saying I don't though. Think it's as big a deal as possibly. You might be making it out to be that wording. I don't think it. I
really.
What I'm saying
so
is, I don't think that's
harmful. You think that after it took a week for them to tell, however many millions of people we think there are. So there's 77 million PlayStation accounts. I think we're all in agreement that most people have multiple accounts. So there's like some lesser number than that of people affected by this. But obviously, in the millions, the count of users numbers in the millions of people who had their personal data stolen. And you think that it's okay for them to beat around the bush, not be honest about what happened, and wait a week to tell you about it.
I just got an email about it today.
You're okay with that.
Too.
You're okay
I'm
with
saying
this.
That what is possible, and if you're saying I'm an apologist, it's that I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt and saying it's possible that what happened is they knew it was bad, they didn't know how bad it was, so let's just shut it down, figure out how bad it is.
And lie about it.
Well, they're not lying about it.
They're lying about it.
They're saying we don't know the extent of the problem yet.
I think it takes time for information to get from, you know, the dinosaur that steps on a thorn to get up to the brain I just said horrible analogy. Like, I think, you know, somewhere along the line, someone realized, shit, this is bad. We got to do something. And then it gets up. They got to get a statement out. But it hasn't gotten all the way up, like, what the huge problem is and what exactly is going on in terms of crafting that, the perfect, you know, statement to
give out.
Fine.
You know what?
People.
I'm going to jump ahead for a second because I feel really strongly about this. I think that from a consumer confidence standpoint and from a consumer standpoint, period, I would have been so much happier if on Wednesday evening they had said, Sony Network Services has determined that something is wrong with our system and we are turning it off immediately because we are concerned about protecting the security and integrity of our system. We will tell you as soon as we know more.
That's nice. Do you think did you guys notice the Sony tablet guys had to have been pissed when they did their press release for their tablets the same day that this news comes out? And one of the touted features on the tablets is it connects to curiosity or whatever.
Curiosity.
And it's like, oh, son of a bitch. That's not good.
But you feel what I'm saying? Like, tell me, like, I'm actually willing to be a bit of a guinea pig consumer. But tell me that your security guys are so fucking sharp that they unplugged it, and they unplugged it because the protocol said to. Like, I want to know that they're operating like a well-oiled machine, that, like, they know what the shit's going on. I don't have any misconceptions about the world. I understand that people get hacked. I understand that people get attacked. I understand that someplace that's got credit card numbers and personal data is going to undergo those things. What I want to know is that the guys at the NOC running this thing are up on their shit. And when something like, and that, like, when it goes to DEF CON, that they go, okay, implement the plan right now. And
but
the
they
plan,
did do that. They just didn't tell you.
Did they do that? Because apparently they were investigating. See, that's the problem, is like they're playing all these little games now. Like, oh, and so hold on. Let's see. Did they do that? Because the word today or on Monday was that maybe they didn't know what was going on, because now they want to play both edges of the sword. So Friday evening, we'll get to that. Friday evening, they do that. They say they're working to resolve the situation quickly, but they'll update you as soon as they can. Saturday, unprecedented Saturday announcement. They tell us that they're rebuilding the system to further strengthen our network infrastructure. Now, for me, that immediately set off bells, too. I'm like, wow, they're rebuilding the system? Obviously, something bad happened. Monday, the update was, there is no update. Don't know anything. Tuesday, we get the bombshell. Tuesday, we get the massive bombshell that is, we have discovered that between April 17th and 19th, certain PlayStation Network and Curiosity service user account information was compromised in connection with an illegal and unauthorized intrusion into our network. Which, by the way, I'm in no way remotely removing any blame from the hackers. Obviously, it was illegal intrusion. It was a hack. Yes, it was obviously bad. And then they detail all the stuff that was lost, which is, you know, unfortunate. Like, they have your name, they have your address, they have your email address, they have your birthday. They also have your password and login for those services. So, by the way, if you use the same password and login as you do on PSN, on Curiosity, anywhere else, please go and change those if you haven't already. You should be up on that. I mean, everyone listen to this. The hard part is hitting all the people who don't listen to, like, aren't gamers and don't listen to this and getting the message out to them.
I heard, though, that because of this, this is where Obama's birth certificate came from.
Oh, so it wasn't Trump. Damn.
I'm sorry, that was horrible.
How proud will Trump be of that? Maybe Trump did this. He could be I'm so proud today.
We have the addresses of everybody.
Oh, my God. So anyway.
According to the email they sent me, it seems like the thing I have to be worried about is mail scams. Like, I'm already sensitive to that.
You should be. No, you should be.
Of course.
No, so I think the biggest thing is that a lot of people do use common logins and passwords. And so
some hacker is going to use my shit, is going to look at the millions of people that he found and go, I'm going to try to log in as Jeff Cannata to, let's see, Amazon. I'm going to try to log in on Amazon.
He's got your email.
Him.
Yes, but he's not going to be doing that. A program he's designed that goes to all these websites and automatically dumps your info in will be doing that. So I mean, it's not like one dude typing with two fingers, Jeff Cannata.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
I guess I shouldn't.
Dude, they can throw a lot of computational, like, if the thought of so there's 77, let's say we have 20 million unique user records, or let's say we have 30 million unique user records, they only need to brute force a couple percent.
The password thing is an issue. The password thing is an issue. Everything else, like, Yellow Pages arrive on my doorstep every week with a list of everyone's address and name?
You really are on the apologist team, aren't you?
I'm not on apologist team.
You are on the apologist team.
I'm on the
team Sony.
I'm not. It's not. I'm not defending any particular company. I guess, unfortunately, and this goes against everything I stand for, I'm on the apathetic, what does this matter team. I'm on the whole lot of Sturm und Drang signifying nothing.
So, can we publish your, home address and email and
dude,
password.
If people want to find my home address, they can find it.
How about your passwords?
Passwords an issue, but if all I have to do is change my password on everything, and you should be doing that periodically anyway, and most people don't, but you should.
I say should be doing.
You should be.
Should be doing is a nice thing to say, and I agree. I completely agree. As a matter of fact, we put up a piece yesterday that Steve wrote because Steve got hit with some credit card fraud, and we in no way implicated that it was related to PlayStation Network. Probably isn't. Who knows what it was related to? There's no telling, but it is a good reminder that that shit happens all the time.
Listen, identity theft is a real issue. It's fucking
it's
bad if it happens to you, and I don't want it to happen to me, that's for sure.
I don't
feel like this particular case is on the lighter end of those worries. And maybe I'm wrong.
I think that I think you're wrong. And I'll tell you, and the reason I think you're wrong is because many people use common passwords. You use one password for a lot of things. So while it might not matter that on PlayStation, your network, your Enjoy 8-bit, and they know your password for Enjoy 8-bit,
you
the really problem is...
I shouldn't have said my password like that.
What?
That's not cool to say my password on the show like that.
The problem is that they also know...
I shouldn't have put it on my shirt, I guess.
They also know the email associated. So now they can take the email and join it with the password and then start brute forcing that all over the place. And the chances are they will find a lot of folks whose that login will then get them in the door. Mm-hmm. And maybe it only gets you in the door with your email account. But then if it gets you in the door with their email account, then they can start changing other security places that you have. You know, they can like log into websites where it says, oh, send me an email with my password update. And they can get like password updates and then change your passwords for you. Mm-hmm. There's a number of things they could do, right? Mm-hmm. It's a relatively big deal. So finishing this chronicle, that was Tuesday. They said it's going to be until a week. So depending on when you're listening to this over the weekend, by Tuesday or Wednesday of next week, so that would be May 2nd or 3rd, Sony hopes to have some PlayStation Network services back up and running. On Wednesday, they issued a little more information. And this is the part that's the other side of the sword that I was telling you about. So on Wednesday, they made a statement that there's a difference in timing between when we identified there was an intrusion and when we learned of consumers' data being compromised. We learned there was an intrusion on April 19th and subsequently shut the services down. So, okay, we learned the intrusion on the 19th. We shut the service down the next day. So, first of all, it took them a day to figure out to shut the service down. That's troublesome a little bit. We then brought in outside experts to help us learn how the intrusion occurred and to conduct an investigation to determine the nature and scope of the incident. It was necessary to conduct several days of forensic analysis, and it took our experts until yesterday, Monday, to understand the scope of the breach. We then shared that information with our consumers and announced it publicly this afternoon, Tuesday. So first of all, what they're saying now is that despite the fact that they're running a system that has millions
and millions,
millions of people's personal data and credit card information, that they don't have one specialist or a team of specialists capable of recognizing when they've been hacked. They have to hire an outside security team. And then it takes that outside security team, because clearly they haven't been consulting on a regular basis. They're not familiar enough with the system. And it takes them 5 full days to figure out, hey, you guys have been hacked and had your shit pirated. And then after they get their shit pirated and have it all figured out, it takes them another 24 hours to tell all the people who've had their shit stolen that you've had your shit stolen.
So to join Team Jeff, what are our colors? What's our slogan? Do we have a handshake?
Yeah,
apologies.
I'll show it to you in a second.
Is it, sorry. Some of these things... And
I realize that I'm internet raging, but I find the way they've handled it really poor.
I think it's justified, the rage. I think it's tough because you're angry and upset, but some of these things just take time, so they find out about it. At that point, you know, PR is going, shit, this is horrible. They got to draft something. They got to get it over to legal. Legal has to look at it and say, yeah, that's not exactly what's happening. And then it gets kicked down. And it's how fast can they really? I mean,
yeah, listen to the lawyer, dude.
Kevin Butler can't just tweet, ah, shit, we fucked up. You know, sorry about your network.
And I don't want him to do that. I'm disappointed that they didn't have that as many people's data as they're handling, as big as they are, that they didn't have a fail-safe system in place to handle this sort of collapse. That they weren't prepared. They were obviously very ill prepared for this situation. Obviously, very ill prepared for it. The shit hit the fan, and their reaction was, oh, shit, the shit hit the fan. What the fuck do we do now?
I don't know if it was – I think maybe you might be overstating it. I don't think it's what the fuck do we do now. It's shut it off, figure out what went down. Did we did they just come in and mess around, or did they get stuff? Oh, they got stuff. We got to tell people.
You would think that of – I mean, so I just like counter-arguing both of you. I have no position. You do think that Sony, of all companies right now with all this anonymous stuff, whom it has said is not responsible for this. And saying,
does that really mean they aren't?
No,
I don't buy that.
But you would think that they would be uber prepared for this thing. Like, oh, shit, we've pissed off a bunch of internet hackers. We have internet hackable stuff. Let's get our plan B
in line as soon as all that anonymous stuff happened. When they said we're gonna do something bad to you,
do you think? I want to be really clear because I was like, I mean, I had a couple beers and I'm a little irritable, and I feel very strongly that we have to hold. I feel very strongly we have to hold companies accountable. And this is not just for Sony. I mean, this extends back to like BP as well.
Oh, I can support that position 100%.
I am very, very concerned that in the modern world, we start to let these companies hide behind, oh, I got to tell the lawyers, and there's like things we might get sued about. And I'm just going to issue this statement. I pressed and pressed and pressed and pressed. And I just feel like, you know, I have a lot of sympathy for the situation. I have a tremendous amount of sympathy for the situation. I appreciate they got hacked. It's a shitty situation. I appreciate that, as they've told us now, they had a number of safeguards in place, that they had encryption, that our data, you know, our sensitive data, like credit cards. Like, one of the good things that came out finally on Wednesday, late on Wednesday, is that, you know what? Evidently, they were storing all of our credit cards in encryption, which is great. Now, could that be broken? Sure. But, I mean, they had taken a lot of these steps. Why couldn't we have learned that earlier? Why couldn't they have – again – I want to know that people that I'm trusting to this degree are going to be able to – it's like I want to know where my military is, you know? Like, I don't want to
– you don't. But let me just
say, what I'm saying?
I
it's
support
like,
that.
I want them to be secure and I want them to respond. And, like, if they do something, I want to know about it right away. I don't want to hear about it 5 days later after shit's already really gone to hell.
I hear where you're coming from, and I certainly acknowledge that you are much more inside this story than either of the two of us are. So you've been
I've been trying to get a I as of yet have still not been able to get a direct comment from Sony,
and that's problematic. And I agree. I will ask you this question.
Yes.
Do you think other companies, Microsoft,
no,
Amazon, other companies would have handled this better, or are more prepared to handle some sort of situation?
Would I like,
this?
To? Would I like to? Or I tell you what? I
do you think?
That,
do you suspect that any, not even a video game company, but any company wherein you have your credit card information, your personal information?
Well, God help us if Amazon isn't able
right.
To,
I'm wondering. I'm wondering the meetings that were had in both of those companies and others.
Oh, I'm sure.
Post this news of going, hey guys, maybe we should do a review on how secure we are.
I remember what we talked about. I mean, I feel very strongly, not very strongly. I feel like my conspiracy theory is that, and I've actually kind of formulated this a little more like talking to some guys at work, is that Anonymous was a group of hackers, right? And within Anonymous, which is already a group of hackers, so they're already, you know, of a certain disposition, it's fairly likely that maybe a few of them, a splinter group of them, were actually pretty criminal, like pretty bad dudes, maybe. Or new dudes who are bad dudes, and saw, hey, we're gonna have this opportunity. There's gonna be a big attack against Sony, and that and a denial of service attack, of course, like occupies so much network resources that now suddenly that gives you an opportunity to go and do those hacks potentially.
And yes, but
and then not- and then real criminal people, like they're out there every day trying to hack people, trying
completely.
To get information.
I get emails every single day.
Take advantage of the situation, and we wind up getting screwed out of it. Again, please do not misinterpret what I'm saying.
But there's
the
also
bad
no
guys,
evidence.
The bad guys here are the hackers. The bad guys are the people who are criminals, who stole the data for, you know, ill-conceived purposes.
But there's also no evidence yet that this was done for any there's been
malicious
no
purpose?
Attributable. You know, it may have been done because they can.
Maybe.
To show, I mean, to wag their dicks at Sony.
We'll never know because it's all going to be anecdotal. I mean, I have specifically kept us on Shaq News from writing stories about, you know, oh, my credit card was charged with this, or oh, my email was charged with that, or my email was written with this, because there's just no way to document it, right? There's just no way. It's all, at the end of the day, it's all anecdotal. I mean, it's tough not to. I mean, Steve Watts, who writes for us, really strongly wanted to write this piece because, you know, he was reading stories about this and went and checked his debit card that he had on file with PSN, and it had like three random charges for $500 from Germany. Mm-hmm. But there's no way to know if that, I mean, did that have something to do with, maybe that is a hacker who already had it and saw this as an opportunity to take advantage of it too. There's too many layers of shit that could happen.
Yeah.
You can't go off half-cocked about it. I can't
be. Yeah, I'm always trying to step back from the righteous indignation, you know, and
my frustration
is you're in the right to be a upset about it.
If you say we're investigating the cause of a network outage when you pulled the plug the day before, that's pretty disingenuous.
No argument.
That's a problem.
I mean, I think the play with the words, I think Jeff kind of, I mean, they're investigating why they had to pull the plug.
No, I get it. I understand what you're trying to say.
But just say it.
But that's bullshit.
Yeah.
It's duplicitous.
It's totally duplicitous.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I understand the little wrinkle that you're trying to work in there, counselor.
No, I mean it's that's the beauty of these things is that it's there's beauty in the words that make you so angry. They're all very well crafted.
So to wrap up the factual parts, let me give you the parts that you should be finally, now that we had the information from Patrick Siebold over at Sony, the good news is that he confirmed that all credit card numbers were stored in encrypted data format, and there's no evidence that any of them were taken in the first place. So they had the credit card data stored in a separate data table. That data table was completely encrypted. There's no evidence that it was touched.
And let me just say, that fact alone is the biggest reason I'm not more upset than I am. If our credit card information had been exposed, had been open to being exposed, you know, had been
there's arguments to be had there. There's arguments to be had there. I mean, your personal data is valuable also. They did recommend that if you use the same username and password as I did, that you change those. Then they did note that a new system software update will roll out when they get the system coming back online. And as part of that, you will have to establish a new password. So your password is going to be gone. It'll be blown out. You'll have to establish a new one. There'll be a new system software. And they did confirm that they're working with law enforcement personnel around the world to try and prosecute the people who did the break-in, which is great. I'm super supportive of that. I'm just frustrated that they...
Yeah, I hear you, man.
That the system wasn't in place and that they felt like they had to proceed with it this way. So, there you go. They're facing a class action lawsuit over the breach. They're facing the indignation of a Connecticut senator who has written an open letter to Jack Tretton about the situation. I think that we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg on what's going to happen with it. The bottom line is that they were illegally hacked. And outside of the way that they presented the information, then I do have to kind of take a step back and go, okay, got to take a step back here. I'm still frustrated with the way it went down.
Yeah.
Still frustrated.
But there's good news that came out this week, too.
Yes. There is actually going to be a new Nintendo console for us to play with.
Confirmed.
And it'll have 20 analog sticks and a 12-inch touchscreen on the front. It's HD. It's 1820p.
Yeah.
I don't know what 1820p is. I just made that
that's
up.
A lot of
there.
P.
Maybe it's...
That's P from 1820.
That is a whole hell of a lot
Back
of P.
Back to the Future 3 P.
So it's going to be on display at E3. And honestly, I don't know what else there is to say about it because the announcement was very... That was it. It's like, yep, okay, you got us. It's going to be there. You can play it. Bye.
I'm looking forward to playing it.
Did they say the system is playable? I thought it was just there.
Nope, system playable at E3. It'll come out in 2012.
Oh my God.
Yeah, dude. You know what that means? The freaking Sony booth is going to be a mess again.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the Nintendo booth?
What did I say, Sony?
Sony.
Yeah, sorry. Freudian slip. The Nintendo booth will be...
It's going to be amazing.
A mess again.
They've had... Nintendo's been banging on E3s years past. I mean, they know how to put on... With consoles and debuts and... Man, they
it's exciting.
Pack the house.
It's exciting. I'm sad to hear that it sounds like the DS Lite has been... mothballed. I mean, I guess it makes sense because you can play, you know, even if you use the start menu trip to like get them to the right format, you can play everything on the 3DS, but
yeah,
it was a nice affordable product. I mean, I can get it. They probably under a tremendous amount of pressure from software guys like get 3DSs out there,
and everyone has one. Who doesn't have a DS Lite? Everyone has one.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. They lost money, so it's, you know, they did their financials. What were their financials? It was they sold 3.6 million in 3DS, but their profits were down 66%. So I guess they're hitting their timing pretty well as far as when to introduce the new system. What else is interesting out of what happened? I mean, what else is there to say about the new system, by the way? I don't really know what else there is.
Well, what are you hoping for?
What am I hoping for?
Do you want basically Wii HD or you want something new, different? Do you want something that caters more to the hardcore? I mean, we kind of had this discussion with Billy, but...
That's a really interesting question. Actually, one of the guys on the forum said, why do hardcore gamers always feel like Nintendo is not being true to them? And why do they always feel? Why do we always feel like as hardcore hardcore gamers, we should dictate to Nintendo who they ought to be?
Well, the reason we don't feel that is because they give a shit about accessibility and opening the market to non-gamers. And if there's anything the hardcore despises, it's, you know, opening it up to outsiders.
Does that mean that I'm not hardcore? Because I have a lot of fun playing Wii games.
I'm not saying that you no, that doesn't have anything to do with anything. I'm saying that the message, when the message is, let's get this product into the hands of people that aren't already the initiated, when we're preaching to people that aren't the choir, the choir is like, hey, yeah, but, why aren't you preaching to us?
But what I'm saying is, like, I like that I can go over to my friend Corey's house and, like his wife and all of their friends on the block will come around and we can all play Wii games together. And, like, I can't imagine us playing hardly anything else, but we have a great time doing that. Like, we'll play, like, even if it's just dumb Wii sports stuff, like, we're still having a good time and it's
fun.
I'm not
arguing with you. It's fun.
But, I mean,
it is fun.
Does that make me not hardcore?
No. No.
You sure? Because yes. That seemed to be the implication.
You're not hardcore for completely different reasons.
Really?
I'm curious to see how it plays out because I think the current Wii has a controller with twin sticks and triggers, and the classic controller Pro is a very nice controller.
It is,
but developers, agreed. You know, you don't develop for that because that's not the Wii's thing. So I'm curious to see in this system if it's backwards Wii compatible. You know, how they, if developers have so many options, like what type of game you end up getting. Do you still end up getting the fling toss mini games, or are people going to take the chances and, you know, like the rumored GTA 5 is going to launch, like that type of game is going to hit and control on it? And if so, then how does, you know, air quote, Wii Mom react? Is that something that they're interested in?
They'll keep with it. I think they'll keep the Wiimote stuff going. I think they'll keep all that going. I think the idea that, the prototype stuff that you saw with the controller is I'm really interested to see what the real version of that. I mean, maybe it is the same thing. I just don't think that's feasible as a final product. But it could be something. I mean, there's something there with touch pads or something in the controller. Like, there's a lot of potential.
Well, I think
cool
Super Street Fighter 4 3D showed, you know, some of that cool potential with tapping into the touchscreen.
Yeah,
pretty
I totally
awesome.
Agree. And you know, maybe that's it. Maybe they could just, I mean, they have that touchscreen being mass produced for them already, the bottom screen out of the DS. Maybe they just put that in there. Maybe they could actually get to an economy of scale where they're making enough of that screen that they could have that screen in the controller.
I don't know if I want that or not. But do you think that they got scared by 8 million Kinects or whatever it is? Think they went?
No, I don't think scared. No, I don't. Actually, I don't think. I think Nintendo has a track record of not being responsive like that. I think they actually are just watching what's happening with Wii and where they've been. I think they'd like a little. I think they'd like a little more access back to the core gamer without giving up what they have. And I think to do that, they need to bring a new system out, have a little more graphical fidelity power. You know, have a little more. You know, just a raw ability to push a little more pixels to the screen. BHD. Be more in line with like where development is for the other two consoles for those games, and have a more standard controller that people have familiarity with, and then they can be best of both worlds in their opinion.
HD Mario, I'm in. All right. Give me HD Mario, dude. Come on. Amazing.
That's about it. I think we're about at the end. I guess we should do finishing moves.
Sounds good.
You ready to do finishing moves?
Yes.
All right.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
Bang. Jeff Cannata, finish them.
So I got a haircut this week, and I was sitting in the barber chair, and the young lady who was cutting my hair, I didn't know her from Adam when I walked into the store, but she was one of those talkative types, which tends to annoy me a little bit. I don't know. Sometimes just leave me alone.
Let Jeff do the talking, goddammit.
Maybe. I don't know. Anywho, maybe more my problem was how she talked, which was like, oh my God, I can barely even understand what you're saying because you talk like that. And it's really annoying. So.
Yeah, don't do that again, by the way.
Inevitably, we got to what do you do for a living, yada, 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 video games.
I don't play video games. It's like wasting my time on the couch.
Which was interesting. So I always am very interested in engaging these people, the mentality of video games are a waste of time. I have better things to do. It's rotting the brain. And we were talking about, you know, she's like, I haven't played games since like Nintendo, like when I was a kid, Nintendo. Like what's the monkey one? The Donkey Kong? Is Donkey Kong? Is that the monkey one where you hit shit? So, like, when she was a kid, it was an N64, which is fun for me.
Oh, my God. I so wish you could be here seeing him doing this voice. It's amazing.
But it was interesting to me that when the Wii came up, she's like, oh, I love that one. Like, she doesn't associate that with video games. She doesn't even associate it in the same – it's not in the same bucket in her mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, I like the
it implies
way
her
bowling.
Mind has more than one bucket.
Yeah, her mind is a bucket, unfortunately. And there's shit in it. It's a shit bucket. And then we went around to she's like, oh, what's that new one where you don't even have to any controller at all? And she doesn't say controller. She doesn't know what the fuck controller means.
It doesn't have a handle.
You just stand in front of it and you wave your arms around. And I was like, oh yeah, that's the Kinect. Oh, I'd love to try that one. Which is so interesting to me. I mean, it is the thing we kind of always talk about in the abstract about accessibility and you know, opening up the interactive process, video game process, to people who her thesis statement at the beginning of our conversation was video games bad, don't want to play them, waste your time, hate, right? But these other experiences, oh, I'd love to try that. She was dissing on Guitar Hero. My brother plays Guitar Hero. It's so stupid. I tried it once. It's dumb. It's too hard for me. Buttons. That kind of thing, right?
And this is why core gamers don't like it when video game companies attract non-core gamers. You don't want to play with this girl.
Oh, I don't even want to be around the girl. I will say.
I don't want to be around you being the girl.
I will say. Nice haircut.
So can I reschedule you again for like 4 weeks?
Yeah, I was like, as long as you don't talk to me that entire time. She's new to town, by the way. If she's listening to the show, thanks for the excellent haircut.
Stay classy.
Wow. That was the most amazing video. Like, we almost could have made a whole segment out of that just alone. Jeff's haircut. Christian, finish him.
Mine starts happy and gets sad. So I want to say congratulations to my little brother. He is graduated from Art Center in Pasadena.
Lil Spicer.
Yeah. Well, he his professional name is Michael Clock. Is what he uses.
Wow, my clock.
MICAEL. He drops the H. Really awesome motion M-O-U-S-C. Graphic. His fiance is also a great photographer, graduated from Art Center in Pasadena. Amazing, amazing artists. The sad news is that my parents flew out for his graduation, and getting here, my dad got a call on Good Friday saying that Forest Shadow Pet Resort near the Woodlands, Texas, had lost his beloved dog, Buddy.
Unbelievable.
I saw you post about that.
Yeah, so he flew home to try to find her, and it's been about a week now, so chances are slim, and he's devastated. He loves this dog. They went on road trips together all the time. So this is just, if anyone out there near the Woodlands or Houston, Texas, has any information about Buddy, she is a lab mix yellow. Get at me at Facebook, facebook.com/Christian Spicer, or any of the ways you get at people here. There's a $1,500 reward. And I can throw in more. We just want to find the dog alive and well. So if anyone out there has it, please do that. And you don't need to hate the kennel per se, but we're obviously...
Worst pet resort ever.
Yeah, we're devastated by them losing the dog. So anyway, if anyone can help, please do.
Sorry to hear that, man.
As you can imagine, especially having lost Velvet this year, I'm sorry, man. That's really... That was sad.
But congratulations to my brother. It was We had an amazing dinner at Wolves Den, which is a private, not so secretive supper club. And unbelievable. Thank you to Wolves Den for that dinner. It was absolutely incredible.
Wow. Hey, things might be looking up at LucasArts. So, you know, there have been a lot of internal layoffs and they like rejuggled things. Then it seems like they might be getting ready for another run. A friend of mine named Tim Longo, who was the franchise director on Tomb Raider, has left Crystal Dynamics, which was a little troublesome at first to me. But then they're in the run to the finish line on Tomb Raider at this point. I mean, they're targeting a fall release. All of the things that are going to, you know, be the big, you know, salient points of the design are well in place. Tim's returning to LucasArts, and I'm stupidly and wildly getting my hopes up because when he was there, he worked on Republic Commando. And everybody always wanted a Republic Commando sequel, and there were like some rumors about it, but then it didn't happen. And he's an incredibly creative and bright talent in design, and I know that if they had dangled that in front of him, he would jump for it, and I'm just hoping to God that that's he's working on something.
Confirmed, Garnett Lee.
He's working on something, and not and potentially coincidentally, but they did also announce that they have licensed Unreal Engine 3 for multiple multi-platform projects at Lucas. Mm-hmm. And Rebel Commando was originally built on the Unreal Engine also. So it's a lot of connecting the dots. It's a lot of wishful thinking. But God damn, I would love for that. I would really love for that.
It was a bummer when that studio got fractured.
Oh, that was day one. But
was that day one?
That was day one.
Oh, never mind. I tried.
I liked it. I liked the effort.
But it was a nice effort. It was published by them. It was a good effort. All right, folks, that's the big show. Remember, if you're in a generous mood, please at least go check it out or tell your friends about Brooklyn's AIDS lifecycle run ride. She's going to be going 545 miles over 7 days, which is awesome. And you can donate to her at tofighthiv.org/go-to/Brooklyn Frazier. We will, of course, have that link in the show notes. Music today was from, where'd you?
Velvet Chameleon.
Velvet Chameleon, of course. And it was Cherry Blossom, right?
2.2.
I'm up on everything. That's it.
If I may, quickly, sorry, I don't know where we are, but I just got this today. I'm super excited about it. If you're in the Southern California area on Tuesday, May 3rd, so this coming Tuesday, I will be hosting the Comedy Juice show at the Irvine Improv. Comedy Juice, world famous.
Comedy Juice?
Comedy Juice. Daniel Tosh is a regular.
Usually they just call that comedy.
Aziz Ansari is a regular on these shows. If you're in the area,
you like the juice?
You should go. It's going to be fantastic.
I will be there.
Irvine?
Irvine Improv, 10 p.m. is when it starts. Best shows in the nation, Comedy Juice. They're really good.
Okay. Awesome. And you know what one of the other best shows in the nation? Totally Rad Show.
Hey, thank you.
Of course. You should be watching the Totally Rad Show. Actually,
we got four this week.
Sweet.
Four. We got it early. We're going seeing it early. Also, Fast Five, which I already saw.
Nice.
Yeah.
Review next week?
Yes, right.
Awesome. And we're formulating plans for E3, so don't worry. We have plans coming for E3. Big plans.
Ooh.
Massive plans. All right, that's it, folks. That's the big show. Thanks very much for joining us. Until next week, that's your Weekend Confirmed, and we are Ghost.
The new me can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine.
Try to stop me, but they don't get close, so they do it from a distance.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.